Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio until 5 a.m. It is Wednesday. That means Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah. Get your requests in now. That's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. You guys program the music bumps when we come back from breaks and news and all that stuff. A theme every night. Tonight is, of course, this morning is Wild Card Wednesday. So 312-981-7200. Coming up after the 1:30 news, we're going to talk with Brian Wendorf. Brian is the programmer and artistic director of the Chicago Underground Film Festival, which starts tonight and goes through Sunday night at the Logan Theater. It's the 26th annual Chicago Underground Film Festival. And Brian's going to cover it all for us, and we're going to talk about the those movies that we'll be playing. All kinds of movies. Shorts, features, documentaries, experimental, animated. Yeah, been around for 26 years. It's a great fest. We'll talk with Brian a little bit later on about that. We're also going to talk about the best actors playing themselves cameos in movie history. It's a very specific topic, I know, but it's a fun one, and there have been a bunch of them. So we're going to talk about the best actors playing themselves cameos in movies. We've got some music stuff we're going to be talking about. In 1956, in Santa Cruz, rock and roll was banned on June 3rd. So we're going to talk a little bit about that story. And then banned songs from the National Coalition Against Censorship. And these were songs that were censored and banned. And there's a bunch of those, and we'll probably listen to a little of those and talk about those as well. So that's what's coming up on the show. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page, which is up and running all the time. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. And there you go. Also, subscribe to our podcast. Lots of people listen to our podcast, and we're really happy that you do, and we appreciate it, and thank you. And every second of every show is podcast, and you can go to iTunes or Google Play or any place where you get your podcast. Subscribe to the Nick D Show podcast. It's free. It will automatically be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So there it is on a Wednesday morning. Let me say hello to my producer, Tom Hush. Tom, how are you?
I'm good, Nick. How are you?
I'm okay, man. I'm all right. Looking forward to talking about the Chicago Underground Film Festival.
Oh, man. It's really nice to know that I literally have not lived in a world without it.
Yeah. You haven't. Yeah,
I haven't. It founded the year I was born. It heralded great things.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. I'm reminded every morning just how old I am when I work with Tom.
I mean, can I make it a little stranger?
Yeah.
You're only a year older than my mom.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah.
You're 1965, right?
Yes, I was born in 1965.
And she's like, she's 66.
I'm really, I'm thrilled that you're telling everybody that I'm basically old enough to be your father. So that's,
hey, man. That's and so is everybody at this station, you know?
Oh boy. All right. Well, there's Tom. His job is to make me feel old. That's what he does every morning. No, he's a great producer and he's here until 5 o'clock and we'll hear from him throughout the morning. Let's go into the newsroom. It's Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Hey, Nick.
Oh, you're just laughing, right? You're in there laughing.
Job. Oh, make you feel old, make me laugh. I'm just sitting here thinking, that is kind of what, if Nick did have a kid, probably would turn out like Tom. Which is a compliment, but, you know. Now I'll forever never be able to get that out of my head.
Yeah, that's good, man. You just way to go. So Vic is in the newsroom. So Vic, what did you have a good day today? Did you get some sleep?
I did. What's I feel like on? I slept it away, but
did you? Now, I'm so were they drilling on your building?
No, because of the rain. That's right. That's why I slept so much.
Well,
I
you know, can it. I,
oof,
I
after
mean,
Monday.
You know, the weather that we've been having lately, you know, they're not going to start drilling until probably September or October. I mean, it's
did
just
you hear
ridiculous.
The weather forecast I just did is like, I just bold letters, just rain.
It's rain.
I'll let you know when
it
stops.
It's just absurd.
How about that? We'll
see. It's completely absurd. I'm looking outside right now, lightning downtown. There's a little rain coming down. I know that you reported thunderstorms at O'Hare, so it's making its way down to the is it supposed to rain all night? All overnight?
It's supposed to arrive down here in Chicago around 3 a.m. and then taper off around 5 a.m., but we're supposed to still start the day like around daybreak with some sprinkles, you know, how that it takes a while to taper off, but and then again tonight.
I just don't even I'm just so tired of this. I mean, it's absurd. So, all
I'm
right.
sick of it.
Yeah, I am.
Sorry.
Hey, Cubs won.
There you go.
Yeah. Cubs won the two in a row. They look good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, that stretch of bad, you know, where they lost 8 out of 10, they lost 5 in a row, and now they've won 2 in a row both times. Very impressive. And I'll tell you something, Hendricks, man, he's just consistently the best pitcher on the team. Mm-hmm. And he pitched beautifully last night.
He's my main man. I love the professor.
Went in seven innings of pitch. Seven full innings of pitching. He threw 111 pitches, 10 strikeouts, 5 in a row at one point. So and then Strope came in, did his job, closed him down.
Awesome.
So, yeah. No, it was good. And I'll tell you, the home run that Schwarber hit is still flying. I think it's still flying through the air right now as we speak. I mean, he killed that ball, man. He demolished it. And a nice home run from Javi Baez. Javi Baez sometimes makes me a little nervous. Don't slide head first into first base. Don't do that. I mean, he beat the tag and everything, but man, I mean, he could have been clipped by the cleat of Colorado's pitcher, cuz he was trying to get his hand onto the bag. And I was like, man, what? Wow. I mean, he's fun to watch. He's a maniac, and I love him. He's one of my favorite Cubs right now. But, man, I got a little nervous. I'm like, man, sliding head first into first base is a little crazy, a little reckless. But that's Javi. He got away with it because he's Javi. So, yeah, that was fun. That was fun to have the Cubs beat the Rockies. And Rockies had won 8 in a row. And so the Cubs stopped that winning streak. And Milwaukee got murdered last night, didn't they? That was like Milwaukee got spanked.
See, I perked 15, up when you said
15
that.
To nothing. 15 to nothing. Yeah.
Sharing that with Jeannie now.
Yeah, I'm sure she'd be thrilled to hear that.
She didn't mention it.
No? Didn't talk about how her team lost 15 to nothing?
No, and it's 16 to nothing.
Oh, it was 16?
I just looked it up.
Oh, okay, because it was the last time I heard it was 15 to nothing.
We should probably take it easy. We probably have some listeners up there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, all right. Well, we're in the same division. The Cubs are in the same division, man. Yeah. We have to cheer on the Cubs.
Fair game.
Yeah. So, who did they play? They played the Marlins, right?
Yeah, that's who beat.
Yeah, the Marlins one of the worst teams one of the worst teams in the majors.
See, now there will be trash talk when I get home, no doubt about it.
Well, hopefully she doesn't bring up when we played the Marlins.
Yeah.
There's a few times we've had a little bit of a rough go with the Marlins.
Yeah. Well, I'll throw it up there and see if she hits it. Maybe she won't even think of that.
It must be fun to live in a household where you have a major rivalry.
Oh, it's great.
Rivalry.
It's great.
Oh,
it's
yeah. Great. I'm sure it's great. I know one of my friends who is a Cubs fan is dating a Cardinals fan. She grew up in St. Louis.
Yeah, I know a couple like that too.
Man, I can't even imagine that. And and right now she's going crazy because of the Blues in the NHL final. So, all right. Well, hey, you guys, Vic, you like pickles?
Love them.
Me too. Tom?
It took me a while, but I came around to being a fan of pickles.
I love pickles. I love, you know who else loves pickles?
Who?
This guy.
All right.
It was an episode of Oprah about 15 years ago that I watched, and the only time I would ever watch Oprah is if McConaughey is on, because I cannot stand Oprah. But I watched it, and they were at his house, probably one of his houses, and they were going through his house and in his kitchen and stuff, and he opened up his fridge, and he had like 85 jars of different pickles in the fridge. And he's like, man, I like pickles. I love pickles, man.
He had 35 more jars in the glove compartment of his Lincoln.
Yeah. Right, so he can dine on some pickles while there's a buffalo or whatever the hell it is in the middle of the road.
thinking about the ephemeral nature of life.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, so he loves pickles. But I do have this. MSN.com, food and drink, they did a taste test. And we have the results of the four most delicious pickles known to man. I got two jars of pickles in my fridge as we speak right now. I'm about 84 shy of tying McConaughey on pickles in my fridge. So pickles in my fridge. That was a band I was in. Yeah. Wow, the lightning's picking up pretty good out here. Get to see it really nice from the 18th floor, where I'm surrounded by nothing but windows. Not too creepy. All right. I think I can hear Gene Wilder screaming, "It's alive!" from here. All right. Let's take a break, and we'll come back, and I will tell you about the four most delicious pickles known to man. And then after 1:30, we will jump into talking about the Chicago Underground Film Festival with programmer and artistic director Brian Wendorf. That's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. Did you play this on purpose? Because of the McConaughey mention?
Oh, no. I've just been on a Bob Dylan kick.
Okay, because that song is playing during the greatest entrance in film history when he walks into the Emporium.
Yeah, Hurricane. Okay. Yeah. I almost forgot.
Yeah, no. Anytime I hear a song from Days of Confused, whatever scene it's in pops immediately into my head, and that's one of the greatest entrances in film history. And I'm not exaggerating. I think it's one of the cool, just that song being played. And as they walk in slow motion into the Emporium, and Wooderson points, yeah, all right. He's got the Amboy Dukes Ted Nugent t-shirt on.
Jeez.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio in a stormy downtown Chicago right now. And of course we could probably say that every day. So, anyway, welcome back. And coming up after 1:30, Brian Wendorf is going to join us, programmer and artistic director of Chicago Underground Film Festival. And we're going to talk about this year's fest, 26th anniversary, and it starts tonight. It goes through the weekend. We'll give you all the details. So, pickles. So we taste tested 22 varieties of jarred pickles and found the best healthy pickles and in the grocery store. Winning brands include Grillo's, Crisp & Company, Bubby's, Taco Texas, and McClure's. About 10 years ago, there were four kinds of pickles. There was dill, there was sweet, there was bread and butter, and there was sour, and about as many brands. Then, through the same mysterious culinary force that has recently gotten people excited about slow cookers and sheet pan dinners, at-home pickling became a thing. Now, there are many different brands of pickles on your grocery store's shelves, as there are brands of potato chips or even nut butters, and people are even drinking pickle juice. As part of Men's Health Best Foods for Men series, we tested 22 jars from Indies to Vlasic and Clausen. By the way, Clausen is the brand that I have in my fridge at home. And here are the winners. Nutrition note, pickles are basically a zero-calorie food. We didn't list the nutrition numbers for each product because, honestly, there's a little difference. If you're counting pickle calories, stop doing that. Okay. So here they are, the four pickles that reign supreme. Best cucumber, parenthetically, dill, is Grillo's Pickles Italian Dill Spears. Grillo's Pickles Italian Dill Spears. They are bright, crunchy, fresh, and tangy, according to one of our tasters. These thick, crisp wedges hit all the pickle high notes. Grillo's packs its cucumbers with fresh garlic and grape leaves, which lends to a slight bite. Make these your go-to snacking pickle. I've had Grillo's. They're very good.
Grillo's is solid.
Yeah, very, very good. Let's see. Best cucumber, not dill, would be Crisp and Company sweet ginger pickles. These fat discs taste like a mashup of sushi ginger and bread and butter pickles. Admittedly, they're not for everyone, but if you like your pickles sweet, crunchy, with a good bite, as one of our tasters reported, you'll want at least one jar of these. Sounds good.
Yeah, I don't know about the ginger, though. That's what's throwing me off.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm not saying that I don't like ginger. It's great for cleansing the palate if you're having sushi or something like that.
But, yeah, but ginger is an aggressive spice.
It is.
It's a very, I mean, you can go either way on it. Yeah.
But maybe it goes good with the pickle because it's going to cut through some of the intensity of the pickle to mellow it out.
I would try it for sure. Best spicy pickle, McClure's Pickles Spicy Spears. Is that Troy McClure?
That's exactly what I was thinking.
You might know me from such pickles as Spicy Spears. My favorite was you might know me from such educational films as Smoke Yourself Thin. That's one of my favorite Troy McClure credits. And I love the name Troy McClure because it's a combination of Troy Donahue and Doug McClure. Like, that's where they got the name from.
And Phil Hartman's voice.
Oh,
just,
come on.
Just meets, like, it sounds like he would be named Troy McClure.
Yeah. You know, it's been 21 years since he passed away. Since he was killed, I should say.
Wasn't his wife or something?
His wife, yeah.
I can't believe it.
Murder-suicide. With the kids in the house. Horrible story.
Right.
Horrible. For one of the funniest and most talented guys and best cast member in the history of SNL, I'm going to say. He's the best cast member in the history of SNL. Whatever sketch he was in, he was great in, even if it was not a good sketch. And everybody referred to him as the glue. And that is the best compliment that you could possibly give somebody who is working in a sketch comedy improvisational world. Let's see. So McClure's pickles, Spicy Spears. It's a potent pickle. The heat comes on fast, and then it doesn't let up, one taster said. Blame the half of habanero that's packed in each jar. Oh, God. You can eat these straight up if you're a masochist. But they're almost better suited for a Bloody Mary or chopped into a tuna fish salad to help temper the burn. They're available everywhere. All of these are available at like Whole Foods, Walmart, Target, Amazon. I'm not a big hot heat guy. I don't like. I'm not a big spicy food guy at all.
I know a lot of people that swear by hot pickles, though. They are really, really into it. It's like a lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the people who love really spicy stuff are, you know, they're very passionate about it. But I can't do it, man. I can handle a little heat, but man, you know, hey, let's try the ghost pepper. No.
I have trouble with Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
Yeah. Let's see what's next here. Best wild card pickle would be Texas or Talk of Texas. Oh, Texas, Talk O Texas, crisp okra pickles. I've had pickled okra. It's really good.
I've tried fried okra. Oh, fried okra is
great.
Well,
here's
the thing.
The okra, if it's not prepared right, it's slimy. That's why people hate it. That's why people hate it, because, oh, it's slimy. Well, you're not preparing it right. And pickled okra is delicious. I think it's great. I'm not a fan of okra, but these are surprisingly good, a taster said. They're tart and tangy. They have a twang similar to green peppers or vinegar-based barbecue sauce. They'll definitely make your face pucker in joy, another taster said, if you're into that kind of thing.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. Taco Texas is available at Walmart and Amazon as well. And the most divisive pickle is Bubby's Kosher Dill. You're either a Bubby zealot or you're deeply offended by their mere presence on the table. It's because these pickles contain no vinegar and are fermented naturally. This imbues them with a musky/funk in a good way flavor, as one taster puts it. If you love farmhouse ales, sauerkraut, or ripened cheese, Bubby's has your back.
All right.
I'd try it.
Yeah. As if it's anything like sauerkraut, I'm a big sauerkraut guy.
I'm a little bit like bothered by the fact that there's no vinegar in no vinegar involved, which I just think is very strange. But I mean, I'd try it because I would kind of try anything at this point. But I don't, you know, whenever you use the word musty and funk when describing flavor. It's like, really? Is this a selling point?
Unless it's your old Funkadelic records.
Yeah.
You know, it really should not.
No. So they tried 22 varieties of these pickles, and those turned out to be the best. Grillo's, Crisp & Co., and Bubby's, Talk of Texas, and McClure's. So, and you can buy these, most of these at, they say here, Whole Foods, Wegmans. You can get them at Instacart, some of them at Amazon, almost all of them at Amazon. You can order them on Amazon.
Have you ever met someone who's really into pickling food?
Yeah, sure.
They're a very specific type of person. Yeah. I appreciate them because they do cool stuff, but my cousin Christine recently got into it.
Yeah, that's like people who, you know, like people who get into pickling, and there are a lot of people out there who get into pickling, and then there's the home brewers. That's a whole nother avenue.
Hey,
right,
man,
there.
I'm going to make this IPA in my bathtub.
Exactly right. All right. Well, there you go. Enjoy your pickles, everybody, safely. All right, we're going to take a break. The news is coming up next. Then Brian Wendorf from the Chicago Underground Film Festival will join us to chat about this year's fest.
I'm so happy and you're so kind. You want more money, of course, I don't mind. To my nuclear textbooks for atomic rhymes. And the public gets what the public wants. But I want nothing. Society's got some going underground.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Wednesday, so that means Wild Card Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything, get your requests in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. We're going to be talking about the best actors playing themselves cameos in movie history. It's very specific, but it's very fun. We're going to talk about actors playing themselves in movies and how cool those cameos are. We also got some music topics to we're going to talk about. Banned songs from the National Coalition Against Censorship. There's been a ton of songs that have been banned in the past. We'll go through those, maybe play a little bit of those. And also, rock and roll was banned on June 3rd in Santa Cruz, California in 1956. So we'll talk historically a little bit about that. So that's coming up on the show. Phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text and Wildcard Wednesday requests. Okay, starting tonight and going through Sunday is the Chicago Underground Film Festival. And it's in its 26th year. And it takes place at the Logan Theater. And some of the events take place at Elastic Arts over on Diversey. We want to talk about what people can see and how they can become involved. And so we have program and artistic director of the Chicago Underground Film Festival joining us right now. His name is Brian Wendorf, and let's welcome Brian to the show. Brian, welcome to the show, man.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. So how long have you been a part of the Chicago Underground Film Festival?
I was part of the original group of people that put on the first festival 26 years ago.
Wow.
So I've been here from the beginning.
Congratulations, man.
Yeah.
That's great.
I was working with a friend of mine at a video store in Evanston.
Wait a minute. Wait, which video store in Evanston?
It was called Video Adventure.
Yeah, that's the only video store in Evanston, as far as I'm concerned, historically. That place is that place was great. One of the best video stores ever. Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was a great place. It was a great experience working there. And one of my coworkers was a friend of mine. He actually got me the job there. But he came into work after Memorial Day weekend in 1993 and had been out at a film convention in another state and had this idea that while he was there to start a film festival. And he came up to me and he said that he wanted to start this. He had this whole idea, and he had the name, the Chicago Underground Film Festival. And this was, again, like 1993. So what he had seen at this convention was young filmmakers who were, at the time, VHS was kind of the medium that people, you know, would make films, and then they could have their films on VHS tapes, and they'd trade them and give them to each other, you know, trade them with each other and sell them through the mail and things and give them to bigger name filmmakers and things. And, you know, and he had this idea. It's like, well, if we showed these films, we could actually help these filmmakers a lot more than just having them hope that they could get their film into the hands of somebody bigger, like a bigger name person. Of course, 26 years, a lot has changed.
Yeah, I'll say,
you know, and I've had to, like, adapt and change as the culture has changed and the technology has changed, that both of those things have been big parts of how the festival has changed. But there was a time before we started the Underground Film Festival that I can't even imagine what starting a film festival was like, because people would have to send actual film reels
right.
in the mail.
Right.
So at least we were getting, like, going to the post office and walking out with, like, bags of VHS tapes. Now everything's on Vimeo, so
right.
it's much, much easier.
Yeah. Where was the first festival held?
The first festival was held on a 3-day weekend in July at the Bismarck Hotel.
Oh,
which
sure.
is now the Allegra Hotel.
Right.
And we had very little money that first year. So what we did was we went to the hotel and convinced them that if they gave us these two ballrooms to show films in, that we would get enough filmmakers coming in from out of town to attend, staying at the hotel, that they would make their money that way. So they gave us the space to show the films that first year. And the first year we had one ballroom that had a 16-millimeter projector in it, and another that had a video set up.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually 3/4-inch U-matic tapes.
Oh,
and
man.
This was before digital video and video projection. It was like on a flat screen TV kind of thing. And so the videos, the programming was that simple. Videos in this theater, films in this theater.
Right.
Now 26 years later, we're at the Logan Theater, a real movie theater.
A beautiful movie theater, too.
We're showing most of the work now is being screened on DCP, which is the standard at movie theaters now. But we still show work on 16-millimeter and 35-millimeter film as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, production values have increased a lot in 26 years because technology allows people to make work that looks much better for less money.
Yeah.
What people could afford to do in 1993 and 94 was a lot of black and white 16-millimeter film and a lot of very primitive video art.
Yeah.
Today, people can do all kinds of things.
Yeah, it's true. And so let me ask you this. What do you guys think constitute as an underground film? What does that mean?
Well, that's a good question, and it's a question that I often deliberately try to avoid giving a really direct answer to.
Uh-huh.
Because one of my ideas about what underground is to me is that as soon as it gets defined too rigidly, it stops being underground.
I see.
Yep. So if you pin it down too much. But that being said, we look to program work that pushes boundaries. It's more experimental in some ways, or if it's more straightforward in its narrative, then there's something in the story or the content that pushes some boundaries or deals with, So it's pretty wide open, and I try to explore all the different ideas of what underground can be within the week of the festival every year.
Right.
So there's experimental shorts programs, there's underground music documentaries, there's narrative features about unusual subjects and things. It's a pretty wide net that we cast for what we consider underground.
And you get entries from around the world, correct? All international films, correct?
Yes, we do. We got films submitted this year from just about every continent. I don't think I had any films submitted from Antarctica this year, but everywhere else. And I don't remember how many different countries were screening, but there's work from all over the world in the festival. A lot of work is from the United States, but a lot of it is from other places. And I think it's a pretty diverse program, so there's hopefully something for everybody to find. If you're open-minded and are open to films that are, not your
your basic
mainstream blockbusters, you probably can find something in the festival that will appeal to you.
The website is cuff.org. That's cuff.org, and it has all the information and a full schedule. I'm looking at the schedule right now. So your opening night feature is called Empty Metal. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Can you tell me a little bit?
Yeah. Empty Metal is a narrative feature made by two filmmakers, Adam Cahill and Bailey Schweitzer.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't met Bailey before. I know Adam and his brother had a film at the festival a few years ago that won an award. And so I had been aware of them and knew he was working on this other feature. So we're really happy to it's a kind of a low budget independent political thriller, but not thriller in like an action way. It's more a film about political, it's an ideas film.
Okay.
But it's a narrative, it's a story. It's about a group of noise musicians, like young experimental noise music musicians who are recruited by a mysterious group of political radicals that include a Native American woman, a Rastafarian, and like a Buddhist. They're recruited by this group to perform some political assassinations.
Mm.
And it's a really fascinating film because, like I said, it's a film about ideas. So there's actually a reading list in the closing credits of the film that the filmmakers would encourage the audience to read after seeing the movie to expand the ideas that they explore in it. But it deals a lot with the way young people are feeling about the political climate today,
mm-hmm.
and reacting to it, and questioning it at the same time. I mean, the film doesn't advocate that these political assassinations are necessarily a good thing, but they do explore them as a response to situations and what causes people to want to do more than just write protest music, you know, like, what do you do?
Yeah.
And the frustrations that people feel and the futility of trying to do those things as well.
Yeah. Well, it sounds fascinating. And that's Empty Metal. That's at 8 o'clock tonight, kicking off the festival. There's an opening night party over at Elastic Arts afterwards. And then it continues to go. Brian, can you hang on a second?
Sure.
Okay, Brian's going to hang on a second. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk more with Brian and a little bit more about the schedule and what he thinks are the highlights of this year's 26th Annual Chicago Underground Film Festival. For information and tickets and website stuff is at cuff.org, cuff.org. It all takes place at the Logan Theater. The screenings are at the Logan Theater, and then there are events that take place at Elastic Arts right around the corner on Diversity. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, more with Brian from the Chicago Underground Film Festival. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, and we are here until 5 a.m. It's Wednesday, so that's Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in. Any artist, any song, get a thing. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We got some music topics that we're going to get to, and some of the best cameos by actors playing themselves in movies. And more. Our phone lines and text lines are open all the time, 312-981-7200. Follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Okay, let's get back to our conversation with Brian Wendorf, who is the programmer and artistic director of the Chicago Underground Film Festival, which starts tonight, goes through the end of the weekend on Sunday, celebrating its 26th anniversary. The films are experimental and underground and interesting, and they range from shorts to narratives to documentaries to everything else in between. And it all takes place at the Logan Theater at 2646 North Milwaukee, and some of the other events take place at Elastic Arts right around the corner on Diversey. Let's welcome Brian back. Brian, welcome back.
Thanks. Hi.
Hey, how many movies do you have to watch? Do you guys have to actually screen? I mean, do you ever get bleary-eyed narrowing it down?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it can be a lot of work, especially as the programming deadline is approaching and we're getting through everything. We received over 2,000 submissions this year.
Jeez.
I want to say around 2,400, maybe.
Shit, man.
Well over 2,000. And we have a committee of people that are, you know, filmmakers and other people watching films before they get to me and kind of weeding it down. I probably end up personally watching about half the submissions myself, though. By the end, I watch at least 1,000 films.
Oh, man.
So it gets, yeah, I definitely get bleary-eyed and stuff. But and that's to whittle that down to, there's a little over 100 films showing this year in the festival. I don't remember the exact count. I think it was like 110 or so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then trying to put together programs that we think make some sense, you know, like with the shorts, to put things together in a way that we think they complement each other and make
right.
them interesting.
Right, and your short, your shorts programs have titles, actually, so they definitely have a theme.
Well, the titles of all the shorts programs this year are the names of famous works of art that we used as the titles. We kind of always pick some kind of reference. For one year, we did all the titles were the names of Captain Beefheart songs. And one year, they were names of sketches from the Monty Python's Flying Circus.
<That's>...
But this year, they were the names of famous.
Did you, by the way, when you did the Python, did you have one called the Cheese Shop?
No, but that's a good one. I do like the Cheese Shop. I'm a big Monty Python fan.
Yeah, so am I. I'm a massive Monty Python fan. Yeah.
So, yeah, the shorts programs, we also try to mix up the kinds of films. Like, I don't really like to put all our animated films in one program together or all of our documentary shorts in one program together.
Sure.
I like to find an animated short and a documentary and an experimental film and maybe a narrative that all seem to have some loose idea between them all,
yeah.
That make them make sense together.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, when you go to a shorts program at our festival, it'll change a lot from one film to the next, but hopefully you'll see some thread tying it all together.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you, which is
kind of what we want to do on the bigger scale with the whole festival. Yeah.
Gotcha. Now, what are some of the highlights for you? What are some of the films that really stand out for you this year? I know you programmed it, you like them all, but what are some of the ones that stand out for you?
Well, let's see. Some things I'd like to mention that might be of particular interest to your listeners. I know you were playing The Jam earlier when the show started. I love that song. So we do a lot of music-related programming. So I'll mention some of those. We're doing three actual feature documentaries about music this year. One is about the New York folk musician Karen Dalton, who was a contemporary of Bob Dylan's, was part of the Greenwich Village folk scene in the 60s, only released a few albums, not known by a lot of people, but people who do know her music are usually big fans. She kind of had a voice like Billie Holiday, but was in the folk scene. We're showing this film from Switzerland called A Bright Light, which the filmmaker came from Switzerland to the United States and kind of did a road trip traveling through all the places that Karen Dalton had lived and interviewed people and things. And the film's also, she's talking about Karen Dalton's music and life, but it's also about just the creative process in general and her trying to understand this woman's life and her own ideas about creativity and things that... So it's not like a straight, like a VH1 Behind the Music style music documentary.
Right.
It's a little.
I just want to let people know that that's at 8:45 Thursday night. A Bright Light.
That's right.
8:45 Thursday night at the Logan. If you're interested in seeing that, 8:45 on Thursday night.
And 8:45 on Friday, we're actually showing the U.S. premiere. First time this This is a brand new film. It's just started playing at festivals, and this is the first time it's ever shown in the United States. It's a film called Where Does a Body End? And it's about the New York experimental no-wave band from the 80s that just recently ended their career. But the band Swans, who were like a post-punk no-wave band, very abrasive, very loud, very intense band. Michael Girard, the leader of this band, led the group from the early 80s up until just a few years ago. We called it quits. And it's a, follows their entire career. And the band changed styles a lot. It was always very intense, but it went from really, really industrial, hard music at the very beginning to kind of folky at times to a almost cathartic, like shamanistic kind of things in their later records. I'm a huge fan, and I thought the film captured their story really well, so I was really excited to show that.
That's great. And that's Friday, 8:45. It's called Where Does a Body End?
Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 8:45, all our music films at all three of those time slots each day. 8:45 is the time for music.
Yeah.
So Saturday, we're showing a documentary called Desolation Center. And Desolation Center was a name given to a series of underground music concerts that were held outside in the desert, outside Los Angeles in the 80s. The filmmaker was the organizer of those music events in the 80s, and he made this documentary about these shows that he did, where bands like Sonic Youth and Einsters and Neubauten and things, people would buy like a ticket and get on a school bus, and they'd drive you out to the desert, and you'd get out of the school bus, and these bands would be playing in the middle of nowhere. Because it was this time during, in Los Angeles at that time, the police hated the punk scene, and they would shut down these shows, and they, like riots would happen all the time. So Stuart had this idea, it's like, well, let's just take this completely outside the city somewhere else and do these things.
That's cool.
And his roommate at the time when he was doing this was Perry Farrell, who later formed the band Jane's Addiction and started Lollapalooza.
Yeah.
And acknowledges in the film that these shows in the desert were a big inspiration for him to start Lollapalooza. The people that started Burning Man acknowledge that these were an inspiration to them. So this was like, very few people might have known about this when they were happening.
Yeah.
But its reverberations through culture continue.
That's crazy. You know, I've never heard of this before, but I'm looking at some of the artists: Sonic Youth, Meat Puppets, Minutemen, Red Cross, Swans, as you mentioned before, Savage Republic. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really something. I'd never heard that these events took place. That's great.
No, they were very like really underground events, and he did them just for a few years, and then, you know, you reach a point where it either has to become like a bigger, much more commercial thing, or you move on. And he got into publishing and started a bookstore and a publishing imprint. But he went back and interviewed all the people that participated then and made this really fascinating documentary about it. So that's Saturday at 8:45.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And your closing night film, what's your closing night film?
Closing night is a film called Dollhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the winner of the Grand Jury Prize at the Slam Dance Film Festival, which is an underground punk rock inspired film festival that takes place concurrent with Sundance in Park City, Utah, in January.
Yeah.
I was out at Slam Dance this year looking for films for Cuff, and I was actually on their jury this year. And Dollhouse was the winning feature there. It's a it's all done with dolls, puppet animation, and it traces a fictional story of a Britney Spears-esque type of teen pop star. But the film is really all about ideas about the treatment of women in society and culture, and the systematic sexism and misogyny that exists in popular culture and things. So it's a really smart, fascinating film. It was made for almost no money. The filmmaker basically made it in her apartment, and her and a couple of friends did all the voices for all the characters and made doll. So that's the closing film this year.
Well, that's great, Brian. I want to thank you for coming on, man. This sounds really great, and there's something for everybody. It's the Chicago Underground Film Festival. The screenings take place at the Logan Theater. There are events also at Elastic Arts. It's $100 for a festival pass. There are also single tickets available. All you have to do is go to CUFF.org, CUFF.org, for information, schedules, and tickets. And it starts tonight, the 5th, and it goes through Sunday the 9th. Brian, it was a pleasure talking to you, man.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hope you have a huge success this weekend. Take care.
Thanks a lot. All right.
There you go. Bye-bye. Brian Wendorf, everybody. Programmer, artistic director of Chicago Underground Film Festival, celebrating its 26th year, starting tonight and going through Sunday. Again, for schedule information and more, you can go to CUFF.org, CUFF.org. All right, we'll take a break. We got the news coming up next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. That's an interesting way to kick off Wild Card Wednesday. It's Wild Card Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. Get your requests in now at 312-981-7200. Who requested Gonna Fly Now?
So it was kind of a double request here. So Dave from Monroe made the initial request, but Squat also requested the theme from Rocky in honor of his high school alma mater, Marquette Academy High School in Ottawa, Illinois, who won the Class A state title in baseball this past Saturday.
Were they the underdogs?
I'm going to assume
Okay, but I just, that Rocky doesn't win in the first movie.
He does not.
America loves a comeback.
Yeah. I mean,
but he goes the distance.
He does go the distance.
I would also like to make a third request on the back of those two gentlemen. I would like that also to play it after all of my newscasts.
Oh wow! Thank you. All right.
Thanks, Tom.
Well, there goes Wild Card Wednesday, Triple Play Thursday.
after every newscast,
right?
Because are you gonna just jump up and down with your arms up?
I can do that too. If you'll play it, I'll do it.
Didn't you notice that giant, slab of meat he's been punching?
Yeah, slab of meat in the newsroom. Well, there you go, Rocky. You know, you remember the immortal line that Apollo Creed has at the end of Rocky? Ain't going to be no rematch. I don't want a rematch. Ain't going to be no rematch. Six more movies.
He gets bumped off in the fourth one.
Yeah. I think these two Creed movies are better than any of the Rocky sequels.
Yeah, probably.
Any of the Rocky sequels. Creed, the first Creed is the best Rocky movie since Rocky, since the original Rocky. Like, not even Creed surprised the hell out of me when I saw it, because I was like, oh, all right. And it was great. It was great. And the second one was really, really good. So it wasn't quite as good as the first one, but it was really good. But that first Creed, man. And who won the Academy Award that year? Oh, it was Mark Rylance for supporting actor for Bridge of Spies. Should have been Stallone.
Yeah, and that's no shade on Mark Rylance.
No, he's great.
He's great, but
should have been Stallone. Should have been Stallone. Stallone is unbelievable in Creed, and the career that he's had for playing that character, the Academy should have taken that into account and went, you know what? It's time to give Sylvester Stallone the Oscar for this character. So, man, that's a good movie, though. Made me cry. It was exciting, and Stallone was really good in it, and Michael B. Jordan.
Well, it just goes to show that you can still make a great underdog movie.
Yeah.
Even though you kind of have an inkling that he's going to come out on top, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You're there for the journey.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got the Rocky theme to kick off Wildcard Wednesday. Got a couple of texts here before we move on, because we're going to be talking about the best actors playing themselves cameos in movie history. Cameos are fun anyway, especially if they're like surprise cameos and you don't know them. That's always a lot of fun. But it's always really funny when they play themselves in a movie. So we're going to talk about that. And if you want to jump in for talk or text, it's 312-981-7200. And we can open it up for the phone lines here. We can open it up to best cameos, your favorite cameos of all time. They don't necessarily have to be, the actors don't necessarily have to be playing themselves. That's what this article is about from TheRinger.com. The staff at The Ringer picked their favorite actors playing themselves cameos in movie history. And that's what we're going to talk about. But as far as the phone lines go, we'd love to hear from you about your favorite cameos ever. 312-981-7200. Thomas says, wants to know if you've tried the pickled tomatoes or tomatillos at Superdoggy. Yes, I have. And I enjoy them very much. Tom, have you ever been to Gale Street Inn?
Honestly, I have not.
Oh, man.
I know.
You have to rectify that situation.
I really do. Because
it's the greatest restaurant on the planet.
It's not far from my grandma's place. She's on the northwest side.
It's the greatest restaurant on the planet. George Karzis, the greatest proprietor in restaurant history and a good friend. The food is amazing. And they have a signature chicken tomatillo soup. Oh, it's so good. So good. It's on the menu every day. The chicken tomatillo soup is on the menu every day. So, and then they have like a soup of the day as well. But you can always go with the chicken tomatillo. But yeah, I've had that at Superdog. Very good. 630 area code. My neighbor makes his own moonshine. I use it to clean the rust off my driveway. Hang on. Hold it a minute now.
All right.
Wait a minute. I won't name names, but there's somebody that works at this radio station that makes moonshine. And when I was a drinking man, he would bring it in for me. Vic, do you have any idea who that would be? I'm not going to name who it is.
Man,
but
now I'd like to play this game to figure it out.
Can't figure it out. Okay.
Right. No, nobody's coming to mind. I'll have to find out.
I'll tell you something. He made good moonshine.
Past tense, no longer in the business.
Well, no, I don't drink anymore.
Oh yeah, sure. So, no, not. I know you. I know you.
I don't know if he stopped making moonshine. He just doesn't bring it in for me anymore because I don't drink. I don't drink the booze.
Yeah, I wouldn't partake in that either. But I'd like to know.
It was good though.
Mm. Is there really? I mean, is there a good moonshine?
I'll tell you what.
Right?
No. This one wasn't. This was a sweeter one.
Oh
yeah, and it did pack a kick. Let me just
have you ever
it did.
You ever heard of Irish moonshine?
Whoa, no, what is it?
It's called like poutine.
Oh yeah, I have.
To make you blind.
Yeah, I don't know. No kidding.
My grandma keeps a bottle of it behind the bar for some reason.
You know what's funny is there's this commercial for this Irish whiskey that they were running during Raw Monday night. Which just features an Irish dude sitting there with a bottle of this, whatever this kind of whiskey is. I can't remember what the brand of the whiskey is. It's not a brand that I've ever heard of before, so I don't know if it's new or it's new to this country. I don't know. But these commercials unbelievably reinforce the unbelievable drunken stereotype of Irish people. One of them is he's sitting in a leather chair. He's got a glass and the bottle of whiskey, and he's got a glass of whiskey with him. And someone says, "Irishmen love water." And then an arm comes in with like a bottle of water, and they're about to tip it into the whiskey. And he goes, "Just not in our whiskey." Which, by the way, is not true. It's not true, because when I went to Ireland, everybody asked me if I wanted water, because I would order Jameson straight. I would have a Guinness. I would have a pint of Guinness and a shot of Jameson, a double. Neat of Jameson, and they would ask me if I wanted ice, and I'd say no. And they would ask me if I wanted water, and I'd say no. And they just look at me like, "What? I'm not kidding.
They'll take a little water with the whiskey."
Then about 4 hours later, Nick, we're not asking. Drink the water.
Yeah, exactly. No, but I was really surprised that they were like, "Wow, you're a drinker." They're like, I impressed the Irish guys in the pub that I wouldn't have water with my Jameson or ice.
That's saying something if you're impressing.
No, I'm not
people
kidding.
People in Irish bar.
I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding, Vic. Really, they were like looking at me like, "What?" You know, I was like, "No, I want a double shot of Jameson neat." What? It was like unheard of. You know, like people my wife and I met at the pubs that we would talk to. You know, we would buy them a drink, or they would buy us a drink, and they would be surprised by that the fact that I would drink it. I would just drink it neat. No water, no ice. And I was as shocked as anybody to have Irish folks in an Irish pub in, you know, Dublin or Galway, wherever we were, just like doing a double take when I did not take water or ice with my whiskey. So, you know, Vic, that's why I don't drink anymore. There's a lot of reasons.
Well, we all have our reasons.
That's a pretty strong example about why I should not get near liquor. You know what I mean? That's a pretty strong example. When Irish people in Ireland do double takes, you might have a drinking problem.
I don't go into the reasons I don't drink hard liquor anymore. I just always say, I drank all mine. I've already drank all my drinks.
That's exactly right. And it's not
so that way I don't feel left out.
I gotta say,
I drank mine.
It's not easy, man. It's not easy. It's very, very hard. I miss the taste of Jameson.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
I miss it, and but I can't have it. I can't. You know. So, oh man. All right, we're gonna take a quick break. All right, and we're talking about cameos in movies. So if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, just in general, text or talk, 312-981-7200, your favorite cameos of all time. But the article that I'm going to be talking about is specifically about actors playing themselves in cameos. So, all right, we'll take a break here, and more coming up.
The weather here has been as nice as it can be, although it doesn't really matter.
Oh, we have a listener with a sense of humor here on this Wild Card Wednesday morning. Wild Card Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. Who requested that, Tom?
That's coming to us from a listener in the 773, Carol King. It might as well rain Carol until King. September.
Man, amazing. Welcome back, everybody. I think it is going to rain until September. Really, and I think beyond. It'll rain until we get 10 inches of snow. It'll just continue to rain until we continue to have snow. That's basically what's going to happen. All right. We are talking about cameos in movies. What are your favorites? And I'm specifically going to be reading from an article and talking about a very specific one, the best actors playing themselves cameos in movies. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number for your cameo topic. 815 area code says Brad Pitt in Deadpool 2. Yeah, that was the only part of the movie that made me laugh. I hate the Deadpool movies. I know I'm in the minority. I can't stand them. The snarky stuff gets I last about 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do it. I'm look, the whole audience is laughing. Mm-hmm. Oh, you just laughed at what I said because it's going to end up on the show on Friday.
Oh yeah.
I didn't even realize it, man, until you laughed. And
I try not to.
But I seriously, I can't get past it. Like, it's as soon as the snarky, breaking the fourth wall, jokey stuff starts, I'm out.
Yeah, I thought the first one was pretty good. At least the action was pretty good. But then the second one was and it was directed by David Leitch.
I know, man.
And that was some of the worst directed action I'd ever seen. From one of the guys who worked on John Wick.
I know, man.
Couldn't believe it.
I know, man, but I think we know who the real auteur of the John Wick movies are now. The guy who's got the credit now.
Chad Stahelski.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, hold on a second. Did, what's his face, David Leitch, did he direct Atomic Blonde?
He did Atomic Blonde, okay. Which was so much better than Deadpool 2.
Deadpool 2 was terrible, but yeah. Atomic Blonde, not the most original spy kind of movie, but the action scenes, that stairway scene. That fight scene in the stairwell,
awesome.
Unbelievable.
All the action scenes were great. Yeah. The story was,
yeah.
But the rest of it was cool.
I still like it. I saw it twice. I still like it. Wild Bill here. How you doing, Wild Bill? Classic cameo, Ethel Merman in Airplane. Thinks he's Ethel Merman. Then he got to Ethel Merman. You know, that's one of my favorite moments in Airplane, and there are so many. I mean, we could do hours on how great Airplane is. But one of my favorite bits in comedy is a spit take. I love a spit take. It's one of my favorite. I used to try and throw in a spit take in every play that I directed, every comedy I directed. Even if it wasn't in the script, I'd have somebody do a spit take. One of my favorite spit takes ever is in Airplane, and here's why. It's genius. So she's talking about how this is when he's in the hospital, in the bed near Ethel Merman. Julie Haggerty is visiting him, and he's about to take a sip of water, and Julie Haggerty informs him that one of the guys that was with him died or something. One of his military pals died. So he's about to take a sip. So you see Robert Hayes take a sip, and then they cut to a side shot of Julie Haggerty, and she says he's dead, and you hear, and you see the water just fly across the screen. You don't see him do the spit take. You just see the water fly across the screen. And you see Julie Haggerty react to it. It's like, and then you just see, and I'm telling you, every single time I watch Airplane, that might be my favorite moment in the entire movie. I mean, you want to do a spit take in a completely new and hilarious way. That's it. Oh, it's such a funny moment. All right. Hey, it's Doc. Hey, Doc.
Hey, good morning.
Morning, buddy.
You know, you come up with these topics, and I like to challenge myself and think, can I come up with something that matches this?
Uh-huh.
I think I've got one, and you're playing the theme to Rocky, but you're going to know the backstory on this better than me, but Staying Alive, the sequel to Saturday Night Fever.
God.
I know they'd had a few different storylines presented. Travolta didn't like any of them, but Stallone got involved somehow, I think he wrote the one they used.
He wrote and directed it. He directed it, too.
And I know he worked with Travolta to get him that physique.
Right. But
there's a scene where Tony Manero is walking down the sidewalk, and how does he know he's made it in New York? Who's walking at him? Sly Stallone in a fur coat.
Right. He bumps into him. He bumps into him, and Stallone turns around, because you don't see Stallone's face. You just see his back. He's got the stupid fur coat on, and then Travolta bumps into him and turns him around, and that's when you see his face.
Hey, one other thing. I would recommend people get Tom Appel's blog, because you can get the podcast for the show, but I get it sent to me email. But I watched all those celebrity commercials.
Yeah.
And the one with Ruth Gordon is priceless.
It's so funny. It's so good. Yeah, no, you know, everybody, you know, I think we mentioned that you can subscribe to the newsletter and at the Consumer Guide, and you can get the daily drive blog that Tom writes on. I think we mention that pretty much every month. But yeah, thanks for mentioning that too,
Doug.
Yeah,
I would recommend it though.
Okay, buddy. Thanks.
All right.
Take care.
Another fine show.
Take care, buddy. You see Staying Alive?
No, I avoided it like the plague.
Oh my God.
I was lucky. I had the forewarning. I was told how bad it was.
And Stallone made Travolta shave his whole body. Because he's a hairy guy. Travolta's a pretty hairy guy.
Yeah.
And he made him shit, and he was all glisteny and slick. It was a horrible movie. And I love Saturday Night Fever. I think Saturday Night Fever is a legitimately great movie. Well, you know what's really funny about Saturday Night Fever is how misinterpreted it is?
Insofar as what?
Well, because people started going to discos and started, you know, going out every Saturday night and dancing and going to discos and stuff like that because of the movie. The movie's very critical of that lifestyle. It is not glamorous at all. It doesn't glamorize that lifestyle at all. It is a very dark movie. I think Saturday Night Fever is a really dark movie, populated by racist, unlikable characters who do really crappy things to one another. And it's a great, but it's a coming of age movie. It's him, you know, crossing the bridge. And I think it's a great film, but man, was it misinterpreted. People are like, yeah, man, Saturday Night Fever, let's go out and do what Tony Manero does. No,
don't want to be Tony
Nowhere
Manero.
Lifestyle, man. Incredibly racist stuff in that movie, too. I think people forget about how that was a pretty heavy movie. It's a pretty dark film, man. You know, I mean, the music's great and, you know, let's dance to it and stuff, but you watch the movie and you go, jeez. So I had John Badham on my show, the director of so many great movies, including Blue Thunder, which is one of my favorite movies ever made. I love that movie. Do you like Blue Thunder?
I think it's good. I think I enjoyed it.
I adore that movie. I have a thing, though, for Roy Scheider. I like anything with Roy Scheider in it. All right, here's Ike on WGN. Hey, Ike.
Hey, Nick. How's it going with you, man?
All right. What's up?
Okay, the cameo I kind of remember that pops in my head is Hugh Hefner's cameo in Beverly Hills Cop 2.
I don't even remember that. I've only seen Beverly Hills Cop 2 once. I don't remember anything except that I hated it.
Really?
Oh, I hated it. Yeah.
It was a scene where they're tracking down the bad guy, and they track him to the Playboy Mansion, and he, and Eddie Murphy, Axel Foley, he sees Hugh Hefner. Axel Foley!
Yeah. Okay, I don't remember that, but there, Hugh Hefner was in it. Okay. All right, Ike, thanks, man.
No problem.
Yep. I hated Beverly Hills Cop 2 with a passion. Insanely misogynistic movie. Insane. Beverly Hills Cop, I like Beverly Hills Cop 3, directed by John Landis. Stupid as hell. So, all right, let's take a break. You know, we're talking about the best cameos and actors playing themselves specifically. Now, this is, by the way, I just want to say that I did not know this. There's a new Netflix film called Always Be My Maybe, and I've seen trailers for it and commercials for it. I did not know Keanu was in it as himself. And I guess he gets punched, like someone.
Yeah, he's got a fairly big role in it.
Does he really?
Yeah.
I was going to watch it anyway because I like the cast and I think it looks good. But now that I know that Keanu's in it playing Keanu.
Yeah, a very interesting version of himself.
Yeah, I bet. Also, I love the fact that in Keanu, the Key and Peele movie, Keanu provides the voice of the cat. That's a fantastic cameo. All right, let's take a break. News is up next. Fantastic. I'm picturing all the gangs getting on the train, taking it to go to the meeting in the Bronx with Cyrus. Man, the Warriors. Wildcard Wednesday, man. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And that, of course, was the opening credits theme to the Warriors, Walter Hill's masterpiece from 1979. And so, yeah. Who requested the Warriors?
Pardon me, I'm just getting off the phone with some fantastic callers. That was Steve.
Steve requesting the opening credit scene for the Warriors.
Probably my favorite opening credit scene of all time.
One of the best.
So cool.
One of the best. Sets up the whole movie, too. Like, they set up the entire plot right there. It's such a great movie. I tell you, you know, every time I watch the Warriors, I can't even know how many times I've seen the Warriors. But just some of those gangs look so ridiculous. Like, the costumes are just so completely ridiculous.
That's Walter Hill. He just took that, because that book is pretty serious.
It's very serious.
It's like 14-year-olds too.
It is. I mean, it is a young adult novel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's very, very loosely based on that book.
Yeah, the baseball furies weren't in the book.
No, they weren't. Everybody, how many Halloweens have you gone out and seen baseball furies walking around? I mean, it's just one of the most iconic costumes that you can wear at Halloween, one of the most iconic costumes in movie history. So, all right, welcome back, everybody. We're talking about cameos in movies. Which ones are the best ones? And here's this article was at The Ringer, was about actors playing themselves. And the first one they talk about is Bill Murray in Zombieland, which was genius. And I just want to say this, that time when Zombieland came out, there were actually critics who gave that away.
Are you serious?
Yep.
Ah, that's no fun.
Yeah. By the way, I can't wait to see the sequel. I'm so excited about the sequel. But yeah, if somebody actually, people actually gave it away.
Is that movie 10 years old this year?
It is.
Oh, wow.
It is 10 years old. It's amazing, you know, what so many of the actors that were involved in it have gone on to do, and they still all came back.
And Emma Stone looks exactly the same.
She does, man.
Ageless.
Yeah. Abigail Breslin is back. I mean, the holdout was Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah.
He was the holdout.
Well, because he moved on to being Woody Allen's golden boy.
Yeah. So, Bill Murray in Zombieland says, future generations will judge us for the semi-ironic American zombie hysteria of the early 2000s, a distinct, if deeply weird period bookended one end with Max Brooks's 2003 The Zombie Survival Guide and the other, the 2016 box office bomb Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. There, that not one but two Walking Dead programs persist in 2019 is just a smirking zombie joke. And not a rejection of this timeline. Dude, there's a Jim Jarmusch zombie movie coming out in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So shut up. Zombies will never die. And I don't mean that. I just... they're my favorite... They're like... First of all, it's my favorite genre. My favorite genre is horror. My favorite subgenre is zombie movies. My favorite characters in movies are zombies.
I get what they're saying, though. There was a particular renaissance at that time.
And there was a lot of crappy zombie stuff came out. The Pride and Prejudice and Zombies was terrible. World War Z was awful. There were great zombie things and bad zombie things. The first few seasons of Walking Dead, fantastic. Now it sucks. Fear the Walking Dead, terrible. But, let's see. Zombieland, which more than any other book or film... had the winking silliness of the whole genre. It was beautifully simple, with just six speaking parts, five of them played by actors who had been or would go on to be nominated for an Oscar. But of these, Murray's cameo as himself is most memorable. Like Zombies, the Latter-day Murray is a curio of a certain time period, popular among people who would be called hipsters and whom real hipsters would call normies. If a zombie apocalypse happened, of course, Murray would traipse around in his mansion in makeup and welcome visitors. And, of course, the real-life Murray would be down to portray himself in that way. Such is the weirdness and the weird thirstiness of the post-Lost in Translation Bill Murray. So, here's Steve on WGNI. Steve?
Yeah, I'm going to show my comic book geekness, but... Stan Lee and all the Marvel movies, that was great.
Yeah, I don't know if... did he live long enough? I know he did. He's in Endgame.
He did not live long enough to see...
Not Dark Phoenix? He's not in Dark Phoenix?
Probably. I mean,
I think Captain Marvel was his very last...
He's in Endgame.
But Captain Marvel would have been the last one he saw, I think.
The last one he saw, but he's in Endgame.
He is in Endgame. Yeah,
and he's in the Spider-Verse too. I mean, he's animated, but he's in the Spider-Verse movie too.
And going to TV, every cameo in Batman when they're climbing.
The climbing up the walls on the side of the walls is just fantastic, fantastic. My favorite, of course, being Jerry Lewis, but that's just me. So, all right, Steve, thanks, buddy.
Hey, you too.
Yeah. So I don't think he's in Dark Phoenix.
No, probably. Oh, thank God.
Yeah. But that was a beautiful thing they did at the beginning of Endgame where they did that. No, that was Marvel. Captain Marvel is when they did the salute to Stan.
Yeah.
But in the pre-credit sequence. That was really nice. But I didn't know he was going to show up in Spider-Verse. And when he did, I was like, whoa, that's awesome.
Yeah. because that was the thing is that I knew that he created other characters, but I always associated him with Spider-Man specifically.
Yeah.
And it was really nice to see him in that, you know, giving Miles the costume. Yeah. I thought that was really sweet.
I love that movie.
Best Spider-Man, possibly the best Spider-Man movie ever made.
I got to tell you, man, and I didn't expect anything. I expected nothing from that movie. It was like an animated Spider-Man movie, and I was like, why do we need another Spider-Man? There's been 20 of them.
And then they showed you exactly why.
Yeah. And that was a joke in the movie. That was a running joke in the movie.
Yeah.
And it was so beautifully, imaginatively animated, and so funny, and so clever, and really exciting, and it just blew me away. My expectations were extremely low. I also saw it at Navy Pier and IMAX. Which was was one of the best ways to see that movie. I saw that the same night that I saw Marwin. I came in
because
Patty and I interviewed Zemeckis. You know that you were there. Patty and I interviewed Zemeckis, so they screened it for us on a Thursday evening. You know, the night before because we interviewed him on a Friday night, and so we saw it Thursday evening. So I came down early, saw Marwin, went to see Spider-Man. And then I had to kill a bunch of time to get here. I was already down here. I wasn't going to go all the way home. So I saw Spider-Man at Navy Pier and then walked up to River East and I saw Overlord, which I love. Have you seen Overlord?
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot.
I love that movie. Cool. I love that movie. I thought that movie was great. Mm-hmm. So that was a really good night. Like, I saw Marwyn and Spider-Verse and Overlord, all three in the same time, at the same night. I was like, well, that's a good night of movies right there. That's how I felt Saturday when my parents and I saw Rocket Man and Godzilla. That was like...
solid night.
That was a solid 4.5 hours of my life right there. So, all right, cameos is what we're talking about. Here's Harold on WGN. Go ahead, Harold.
Yeah, there's a couple of them. Spy Hard, when they're waiting for the bus shows up and it's Ray Charles.
Oh, I don't even... I have no recollection of that movie whatsoever, Harold.
It just cracked me up when the door opens up, and you don't see who it is, but when the door opens up, it's Ray Charles, and he turns and looks at them, and they're like, never mind.
Yeah. Okay, I don't remember that. I barely remember Spy Hard at all. I know that Leslie Nielsen is in it. That's the only thing I remember about that movie.
Hot Shots Part 2. I loved you in Wall Street.
Yeah, I loved you in Wall Street. That was great. And he's on the boat. He's on an exact replica of the boat from Apocalypse Now as they pass pass each other.
Martin Sheen and Charlie Sheen, yeah.
That was great. All right, Harold, thanks, man. There you go. Michael Cera in This Is the End is next in this article. You know this about me. I have a very low tolerance of those, of the Evan Oldberg, Seth Rogen stuff. One of my favorite Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg projects is Preacher. That's one of my favorite. I think that's great. But this movie, I laughed a few times. I laughed at the Emma Watson stuff. Made me laugh. Emma Watson, right? Why do
yeah,
I
always, from
from Hermione.
Yeah,
but why do I always get her? I always sometimes there's another Emma that starts with a W. She's British, and I always forget. Sometimes I say her name instead of Emma Watson.
Well, I would always say Emma Thompson when I meet Emma Watson, because they were not like they look alike or anything, but it would just throw me off.
But it was Emma. It's Emma. Oh man. Yeah, I don't know. Well, anyway, the entire cast of Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg's apocalyptic comedy plays heightened or twisted versions of themselves, but no one in the same shockingly hilarious extreme as Sarah. During his brief time on screen, the sweet, meek young man from Arrested Development, Juno, and Superbad is revealed to be a coked-up scumbag. After doing a line, he smacks Rihanna's ass. She responds righteously by thunderously slapping him in the face. We did it like 6 times, Rogan told reporters, and the last time he was like, I don't think I can do this anymore. So.
Because he was trying to get Rihanna to really hit him.
Yeah.
He kept telling her, like, no, you got, because she was nervous. She didn't want to hit him.
Yeah.
Because she knew he was just kidding. But, no, she really whacked him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I laughed a few times during that movie, but I just, and again, McBride's in it, and I can't, and he's in it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like Danny McBride has got, there's stretches where it's just him, and I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah, Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg is always hit or miss for me, because it's sometimes you get something like Superbad, which is
Superbad was great,
so funny.
Superbad was great. I
or
go
even
with
Pineapple
that,
but Express.
Pineapple Express is great. I think that has a lot to do with David Gordon Green, but like the Neighbors movies, both of them, I can't even.
Yeah, wasn't a big fan of those. Night Before, I think, is even worse.
Night Before is terrible.
Most of them.
Yeah. And, it affects my opinion of Seth Rogen, who right out of the gate I loved, and I loved on Freaks and Geeks, and I loved in the early Apatow films. But then, like, when Long Shot came out, I was like, man, I'm tired of Seth Rogen, and then it turned out to be great.
he's capable of some interesting stuff.
Oh, I agree. I totally agree. I think he's a very talented guy. I just, these like, dude movies that he makes, I don't have a lot of patience for him. I don't know. But I'm sure there are a lot of people who were my age when Stripes and Animal House and Caddyshack came out who were like, I got no room for this. You know what I mean? I'm sure
Bill Murray guy's a jackass.
I'm sure that it's a generational thing. It's just me being old now, because, you know, I always equate these new Seth Rogen, Apatow kind of spawned guy comedies as being this generation's, you know, Caddyshack's, Animal House, you know, Blues Brothers, that kind of Vacation, that kind of stuff. So, and every generation deserves that kind of comedy. I'm just a little, I got a little tired of it. That's all. All right. We got a break here. We got a break, and we'll come back, and we got more cameos to talk about, and some specific cameos where they play themselves. That's coming up after this break on WGN.
6:33 a.m.
It's over. James Holzhauer loses today on Jeopardy. Now, before anybody goes spoiler alert, it's Jeopardy.
7:03 a.m.
There are some people that are upset with me because of the Jeopardy blurt.
7:24 a.m.
People hate me because I brought up the Jeopardy thing today.
8:06 a.m.
Are people like a spoiler thing, you mean?
People in the booth are pretty upset.
8:24 a.m.
I've got 5 spoiler alert warnings. How many complaints do you think I will still have even though I've done 5
spoilers? Oh, hundreds.
What is a million?
Yeah, thank you. Control the board, Joe.
Spoiler alert. Cochran still works here.
Listen, I don't want to start any trouble, but Lincoln dies at Ford's Theater. And if you haven't seen that video, it's not good.
Weekday mornings on 720 WGN.
Hi, Barry Sterner, founder of your number one home mortgage company, Townstone Financial. Want to close your loan quickly? Want to work with a company with the newest technologies in the mortgage business and get all this with great rates and low closing costs? Then look no further. The answer is Townstone.com. What else does Townstone currently have? How about the low interest rate Home Ready program and Home Possible for home purchases that come with free appraisals? We are also obtaining appraisal waivers on many types of refinances and purchases for conventional loans, which will save you over $450 in closing costs. Don't want to find your bank statements or pay stubs? Well, with our new technology, we can obtain these in many cases without you lifting a finger. Remember, it doesn't matter if you're searching for a jumbo mortgage, FHA, VA, or even a reverse mortgage. I guarantee no one is going to beat Townstone's interest rates and low closing costs, and I own the company. So give us a call now at 312-896-2110 because nobody values your home purchase and refinance business more than Townstone.com. That's TOWNSTONE.com.
Townstone Financial is licensed in Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin, Florida. NMLS 136639. www.nmls.com. SuperAccess.org, equal housing lender.
Hi, this is Lindsay from House Smarts Radio, and I'm with Tom Jenke of Builder's Supply Outlet. You guys helped me with my kitchen remodel, bathrooms, but now I'm thinking about carpeting the kids' playroom.
Did you say carpeting? Lindsay, that is so 90s. We can help bring you up to date with the latest in flooring. We carry it all from our entry-level luxury vinyl to our padding-back LVT, WPC, and SPC.
SP what?
Forget the acronyms. It's 100% waterproof, durable, and strong, and looks gorgeous for years to come.
I love the authentic wood look, and you have it in stock.
Ready to take home today.
And because it's Builder's Supply Outlet, I know I'm getting a quality product at a value that can't be beat.
We've got vinyl flooring starting as low as $1.79 per square foot.
Looks like I'm getting new flooring on a budget.
Builder's Supply Outlet is located just 5 miles east of the Oak Brook Shopping Mall on Cermak Road at 25th Avenue in Broadview. Or check us out online at buildersupplyoutlet.com.
Quality and savings are what you get at Builder Supply Outlet.
Honey, what are we going to do with your grandparents' old coins and jewelry?
I'm pretty sure they're worth some money.
You've been saying that for years.
Okay, how about PGS Gold and Coin? They're the best when it comes to selling family valuables.
And you know this because...
PGS, PGS, when it comes to your valuables, they're the best.
Do that again.
PGS, PGS, when it comes to your valuables, they're the best.
Isn't that the place Jeff sold his grandmother's jewelry when she passed?
Yep, he checked out PGSGoldandCoin.com and found tons of positive reviews. He was blown away by how much he got. Do you? Oh, you're already on the site.
Almost. PGSGoldandCoin.com.
PGS Gold and Coin, the upscale way of selling your coins, jewelry, diamonds, and collectibles. Family owned and operated for over 10 years. Rated A+ by the Better Business Bureau with 3 Chicagoland locations. And they make house calls. PGSGoldandCoin.com or 888-416-2701. That's PGSGoldandCoin.com or 888-416-2701.
PGS. PGS. When it comes to your valuables, they're the best.
Here we come, walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet. Hey, hey, we're the Monkees, and people say we're monkeying around. But we're too busy singing to put anybody down.
Yeah, Monkees. That's right, man. How you doing, everybody? Wildcard Wednesday. You mean Wildcard Wednesday? 312-981-7200. Who requested the Monkees?
That was Sam.
Sam. All right. You know who would have been very happy with that?
Esmeralda Leo.
That's exactly right. Hey, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Hey, Tom.
Hey.
Tell everybody about your new podcast for No Coast Cinema.
Oh, man. Yeah. I got the opportunity to talk with a good friend of mine, Matt Cipolla, who is a contributor to many places like RogerEbert.com and FilmMonthly.com. He was at the Cannes Film Festival recently, and he was only there for like the second week. But he and I talked a little bit about like the politics of Cannes. And how sometimes the folks behind it make certain decisions that aren't really I don't know, kosher with a lot of people.
Yeah.
He's picked specific directors.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, I don't know if they're just giving preferential treatment because they're buddies and all that kind of stuff. And we also talked about Godzilla, and he did not like Godzilla. And
he didn't.
Yeah, we tried to parse through the
Connor, did Connor like Godzilla?
I don't know if he got to see it.
Oh, okay.
This was just me and Matt this
time.
Oh, okay. But we got into this discussion about what the realistic expectations of a Godzilla movie are, and if people like Godzilla or do they like the idea of Godzilla more. Like they think they know what they want, but they actually have no idea what a Godzilla movie is actually like, especially in terms of like the human characters.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, we talked about this, you know, on Monday, is that this new Godzilla movie is specifically made for Godzilla nerds. I mean, specifically. It met my expectations and exceeded them. I mean, it's a Godzilla movie.
it's exactly, they made it exactly the way a Godzilla movie is traditionally made, and they did it in a great way.
I totally agree. I you know, but again, I guess I can understand, you know, some of the negative reviews and why the box office isn't so big. But if you're a nerd, if you're a Godzilla nerd, this movie, it exceeds all expectations.
Yeah, it really does. So.
Hey, by the way, Tom is going to be hosting another round of Know Your Onion after the 4:30 news. And that was when Tom will read some news headlines to you, and you have to guess whether they're real or they're from The Onion. The Onion, of course, being a satirical newspaper who write comedy news stories. But the news, the real news, has gotten so weird that it's getting difficult to see if news headlines from The Onion are almost as real as news headlines from real places. So this is what we do. We get a couple of people on, one at a time, and Tom will read you five headlines, and you have to guess whether they are real or The Onion. And if you get a majority of them correct, you win a prize. But everybody's going to go home, not going to go home empty-handed. You're going to win a prize either way. But it would be good if you got them all. So Know Your Onion, coming up a little bit later on. Know the difference between fake comedy and onion news and real news, because it's getting very blurry. All right. Couple of texts here. We're talking about cameos and then cameos where people play themselves. Before we get to the text, DMX in top five. I don't even remember top five. What the hell was top five?
I'm pretty sure that was a Chris Rock movie.
Chris Rock movie. All right. Top five is not a movie that bothers to construct much of a fourth wall. Chris Rock's best self-made vehicle, all due respect to Head of State. Cast Chris. Did you see? Have you seen I Think I Love My Wife? Chris Rock movie?
Yeah. Yeah.
Kerry Washington in that movie? Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
She's something else, man.
Oh, my God. God, I don't even like that movie, and I've seen it 23 times. I mean, she's a beautiful woman. I love her. I always loved her. I thought she was great on Scandal, and I think she's great in general. I thought she was terrific on the Jefferson reboot that they did a couple of weeks ago. But man, in that movie, oh my God, makes you fall off of furniture. So late in the movie, Rock dispenses with the little pretense that he had to begin with and unleashes the most high-impact cameo in a movie designed to deliver them. Jerry Seinfeld, Taraji P. Henson, Tracy Morgan, Whoopi Goldberg are all well and good. DMX, however, announces himself by growling, then cocking his head like a curious dog, then launching into a god-awful rendition of Charlie Chaplin's Smile, which this fictional version of him really wants to sing. I don't remember that at all. I have no memory of that at all. I don't even think I saw Top 5.
Mm-hmm.
How about this one, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in Airplane?
That's an excellent cameo.
Yeah, it's fantastic. When he grabs the kid and goes, "Listen, kid, I've been hearing that crap ever since I was at ULSA. I'm out there busting my buns every night. Tell your old man to drag Walton and Lanier up and down the court for 48 minutes." I like when people start getting sick, you know, getting sick and passing out and stuff because they ate the fish. I like when they're dragging the body down the aisle and he's got his uniform and the goggles on. That, you know, that's a pretty funny movie, that Airplane. Not bad. But I have to say, it's still my favorite Zucker Brothers movie is Top Secret. That's still my favorite. I think it's funnier than Airplane. I know a lot of people think I'm nuts, but all right, here's some texts here. Dino, Joe Pesci at the end of A Bronx Tale. Yeah, that's good. My favorite scene in Airplane, 773 area code says, when they assume crash positions. Yeah. This is Jeff. My favorite is Alice Cooper in Wayne's World. That's pretty good.
Can I, if I may, I've got
Milwaukee. Do you have Milwaukee?
I do have a little, well, this bit right here.
I think one of the most interesting aspects of Milwaukee is the fact that it's the only major American city to have ever elected three socialist mayors.
Does this guy know how to party or what?
I can't tell you how many times I say that to people.
Yeah.
When they get serious at parties.
Oh, does this guy know how to party
yeah,
or what?
They'll yeah, they'll be talking about, oh, yeah, I think the Israeli-Palestine. Wow, does this guy know how to party or what?
Yeah. 708 area code says LaWanda, LaWanda Page in Shakes the Clown. I don't know if people know the fact that LaWanda Page, Than Astor from Sanford and Son, she was a Chitlin Circuit stand-up comedian, and she worked unbelievably blue. And Red Fox worked with her a lot. Red Fox got her the gig as Aunt Esther and Sanford and Son. So when people saw her in Shakes the Clown, and she's got some unbelievably profane dialogue in that movie, people were shocked. And I'm like, no.
That was her thing.
That's LaWanda Page. Okay, we're going to break for the news, then we'll come back. We've got more cameos to talk about and cameos by people playing themselves to talk about and have some fun with that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us via talk or text. Wild Card Wednesday continues. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. Welcome back. It's Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive on this Wednesday morning, a Wild Card Wednesday. Who requested the theme from Night Gallery?
That was Paul in Maryland.
Yeah. It's a great show. Did you ever see any Night Gallery episodes?
Here and there.
Yeah. I loved Night Gallery when I was a kid.
Little Rod Serling.
Yeah. But, like, it wasn't, you know, and I love Twilight Zone. I think Twilight Zone is great. But this was more horror. They were definitely in the horror genre as opposed to sort of the fantasy science fiction stuff. Although there were certain Twilight Zones that got pretty scary. But I grew up on Night Gallery. I was, like, you know, the show started when I think I was, like, 5 years old when the show started. So, all right. We are talking about cameos in movies. And I've got some other ones of real people, of cameos playing themselves. So now I got to see this Netflix movie now because Keanu plays Keanu. It's Always Be My Maybe, and Keanu Reeves is in it. So
get that one on the list.
I'm required to watch it now. All right, how about this? David Hasselhoff in the SpongeBob SquarePants movie. That's pretty fantastic that they included that one in the article here. Yeah. So. He shows up in the SpongeBob SquarePants movie. This reminds me when my ex and I saw the SpongeBob SquarePants movie in the theater because SpongeBob rules, and so it was playing at the Logan, and this was before they refurbished the Logan. This was back when it was like three theaters, but it just wasn't as you know it didn't have the lounge. It wasn't fancy. It still had old seats and stuff like that. It was like what the Davis was before what they did to the Davis. So, and this was in the days when you could call up. Remember when you would call to get showtimes at movies? They would have an answering machine or they would have a recording and you would call up.
See, I was always in the movie phone. Even though it's not like I didn't have the internet growing up, but we used to use the movie phone.
I did movie phone.
Too. I like the movie phone guy's voice.
Yeah. Well, then you must love the episode of Seinfeld.
I do.
Yeah. Why don't you just tell me the name of the movie you want to see? But anyway, when we called up to get showtimes for the movie, the owners at the time, I don't know if they're still the owners. The owners at the time, I can't remember what country they were from. They didn't have like the best grasp on the English language, you know, which is fine. But they would do the recordings. They would not have like their employees do the recordings with the showtimes. And they would sometimes get the names of the movies a little bit off. So my favorite of all time was when we were going to go see the SpongeBob SquarePants movie. When we called up to get the showtimes, the recording said, "Okay, in theater 2, SpongeBob has square pants. That was my favorite. It was my favorite thing ever. SpongeBob has square pants, and that's how I refer to that movie now, even. SpongeBob has square pants. let's see. We got a few texts here talking about cameos. Al Pacino and Jack and Jill with Adam Sandler. Come on, man. That's a little bit more than a cameo. That's actually a role, which is terrifying and wrong on every level. 630 area code. John Candy at Wally World National Lampoon's Vacation is the best. Yeah, that's a fun cameo. He's very funny in that movie. 717 area code says, good morning, Nick. I realize it can't be considered a cameo, but it was sure nice to see the Dice Man, Andrew Dice Clay, in the recent A Star is Born. Yeah, he was great in that. He was great in that. He's been good in a few movies. He was great on the pilot episode of Vinyl, which we were talking about the other night. He was great in Blue Jasmine, the Woody Allen movie. He was great in that movie. He was in another one too. What was the other one that he was in besides A Star Is Born? Dice was in, but he was so good in Blue Jasmine. I mean, he was like ridiculously good in that, and he was very, very good in Star Is Born too. But I'm trying to think. He did another sort of like surprising. Was he in another Woody Allen? Was he in? I think
who,
he was,
Dice?
Yeah, Dice. Because Dice was in Blue Jasmine. I was completely blown away by his performance in that.
Mm-hmm.
And in Vinyl, and in as we mentioned here, Star Is Born.
I really hate when he. Maybe it's just the old Dice stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I just really never found it funny in any way.
Oh,
like,
man.
I just didn't get it.
The Dice Man Cometh. I've probably seen it 5,000 times. I think it's absolutely hilarious.
Is it supposed to be ironic?
Well, it's a character.
Right, but...
You know, I mean, that's the problem. What happened was people took it seriously. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's why he failed
so
February. It's a completely exaggerated character. I thought Dice Man Cometh, unapologetically, I say, it's hilarious. But the weird thing is, like, the misogyny in Dice Man Cometh is that's the reason why the character is funny, because he's an idiot. But when Eddie Murphy did it in Raw, it was Eddie Murphy. That's the distinction for me. Is that Andrew Dice Clay was actually satirizing these idiots. He was portraying an idiot, and he knew it. I like Adventures of Ford Fairlane. I thought that was good. Rennie Harlan directed that, so I'm predisposed to like it. Here's Howard on WGN. Hey, Howard.
Hey, Nick, how you doing?
All right, what's up?
I think the name of this Woody Allen movie is Bananas.
Well, that's one of them. Yeah, he has a movie called Bananas.
Well, the opening is Howard Cosell calling an assassination as Howard Cosell.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah. No, that's there's a lot there. I mean, I think actually there are other cameos in that, and especially everything you want to know about sex, we're afraid to ask. You know, back when Woody Allen was funny.
That's right. That's when he was funny.
That was back when he was funny. All right, Howard. Thanks, man. Yeah, Annie Hall, which is a movie that I really love. Kind of just when he won the Oscar and everything. After that, it was like, oh, now I'm an auteur.
Yeah, dude, but I like some of that auteur stuff.
Some of it.
Manhattan.
I like Manhattan very much. I think Manhattan might be his best movie. but like stuff like, I hated Crimes and Misdemeanors. Everybody loves that movie.
Well, you weren't a Curse of the Jade Scorpion guy.
Oh, my God. the one that he made, well, like Blue Jasmine to me was that came at a time when he hadn't made a good movie in years. And I thought Blue Jasmine was great. And Cate Blanchett, who was one of my favorite humans on the planet, was great in that movie. I'm trying to think of other ones that I've liked, because I'm not a big Woody Allen guy at all.
Not into Hannah and Her Sisters?
No. It was okay. Hannah and Her Sisters was okay.
Yeah. I would say Manhattan and Annie Hall for me are the two undeniable classics.
I agree with you.
Annie Hall with the lobster thing.
Yeah.
That gets
me
every time.
There's great stuff in Annie Hall. Like, really, truly great stuff in Annie Hall. When he pulls Marshall McLuhan out when he's in the movie line to correct the idiot that's in front of him, and then he looks at the camera and goes, wouldn't it be great if life was like this? That's one of my. I think that's my favorite moment in that movie, and I love the animated section. Let's see. Here's Jay on WGN. Hi, Jay.
How you doing, Curse of the Scorpion? I mean, it's not as good as Curse of the Swamp, Revenge of the Swamp Thing.
Yeah.
Okay, Nick. My cameo comment, Nick, that I was telling to your producer, Tom, I wanted to share that in a Rosalind Russell and Susan St. James, she was an ingenue at the time, Susan St. James, Where Angels Go, Trouble Follows, 1968, and Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart wrote the theme song for the film, and in the book Psychedelic Bubblegum, Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart write about how they got involved to become a cameo in that film. And when they were shooting the film, the introduction to the film, the directors said, "Why, Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart, why don't you appear in the cameo?" As a cameo, they agreed, and so that's how they became a cameo in the film as themselves.
Yeah.
I simply feel that movie, it's a cult classic, really. If someone grew up Catholic, they would like that. But I think it's a cult classic myself, a coming-of-age movie. Right. Susan St. James was an ingenue.
Right. I got it. All right. Those are the cameos. That's the story behind the cameo in that movie. All right, Jay, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Hey, Nick, how about Red Skelton in the original Ocean's 11? I don't remember that. I haven't seen the original Ocean's 11 in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Former 9 area code, Alfred Hitchcock in the Burt. Well,
Alfred Hitchcock in
everything.
In everything, yeah.
Yeah. When we showed North by Northwest last month, that's got a great cameo. It's a great Hitchcock cameo where the bus closes its doors in front of him, won't pick him up, and drives away. That's right at the end of the credits, the opening. So, all right, I don't remember this one in the article. Eminem and Funny People, because I only saw Funny People once because it was terrible.
Dude, I like Funny People. I think the first hour of that movie is actually pretty good, but yeah. I know you don't like Sandler, so it's just not gonna it's not gonna work for you.
No, I mean I didn't like it, and it went on forever. I mean, and it got to the point where it was like, okay, look, I understand that Leslie Mann and Judd Apatow have a couple of daughters and that they like to put them in the movie, but do we really have to see their recital for 15 minutes? Is that something we really have to see?
That's the one thing about Judd Apatow movies, that they're usually overly long.
They are, and that one especially. That one is really too long. But now his older daughter, when she was on Love, fantastic on that show. She was fantastic. But I just was annoyed. You know, their little cameos in, like, I mean, obviously they're in This Is 40, which is a movie, again,
It was just uncomfortable.
Like. But This Is 40 is not This Is 40. And when you hit that age, Tom, you will realize that This Is 40 is not This Is 40. It's not what it's like at all. But I don't remember Eminem in Funny People. He played himself?
Yeah. Honestly, I can't remember that cameo of Eminem as much as I can remember Eminem in The Interview.
Oh, yeah. I didn't make it through that whole movie. I didn't make it. That's another one that falls under that category of the Rogan-esque. I didn't even make it because, you know, obviously it didn't really get released. But
no,
I ended up watching it and I didn't get through it.
I only watched it because North Korea didn't want me to.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And then Halsey in A Star Is Born. Why do I not remember her? Is she the one who presents Gaga with the Grammy?
I'll be real with you. I watched A Star Is Born once, and I never wanted to again. I really didn't care for it.
Really?
Yeah, I really didn't care
for it.
Oh, man,
I thought it was really good.
Gaga was great.
I thought it was really good. I thought Bradley Cooper was phenomenal in it.
What, you mean playing Eddie Vedder?
Well, he wanted to do that voice because he cast Sam Elliott as his brother, so he wanted to have a similar kind of growl to his voice.
I understand that.
You know? And, you know, he cast Sam Elliott, and he's like, well, if we're brothers, I you know, we don't look anything alike. Yeah. We don't look anything alike. But, no, I really liked that movie. I was surprised at how much I liked it. And I am not at all a Lady Gaga fan at all.
I'm just really curious to see how they do it for the, fifth time, sixth time in, like, 10 years?
Oh, they're going to do it? Yeah. That was the fourth version.
That was the fourth version. Yeah. So number five will come up in about 10, 20 years.
Yeah. I liked it, but I guess she...
I can understand that.
I think she's the one who gives Gaga her Grammy
mm-hmm.
before Bradley Cooper goes up and pees himself, which was just one of the most awful, uncomfortable scenes, heartbreaking scenes. I mean...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Getting back to Dice, who was great. And then, of course, Bob Barker and Happy Gilmore. I mean, what are we talking about here? The Price is Wrong, bitch. That scene is hilarious.
I think you've had enough.
Yeah. Yeah. That is, I think, easily Adam Sandler's funniest movie. I think, like, by a mile, oh, yeah. It's his funniest movie.
Well, there's a reason his production company is Happy Gilmore. Yeah. Or Happy Madison.
Happy
production,
Madison.
Because those are the two funniest
movies. Those are the two movies that
had.
He made. That, yeah. But I like Wedding Singer, too.
Wedding Singer is very rewatchable. Yeah. It's great to watch on like a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, but Happy Gilmore is the one that really. I mean, that's like a consistently funny movie. And on top of that, he's got you know a lot of these movies that he does, like Grown Ups and all that crap. He's got the same doofuses in the movie, and they don't do anything. They're just going through the motions. It's just his buddies. But you know, when you got like Christopher McDonald in your movie. Stealing it, by the way, like owning the movie. Shooter McGavin is the best character in that movie. Ben Stiller's hilarious in it. Richard Kiel with a nail in his head. I mean,
isn't the love interest?
I can't remember her name.
Julie Bowen.
Julie
from
Bowen.
Modern Family.
Exactly, she's the love interest. Yeah, and then you got the cameo from Bob Barker. All right, we're gonna wrap up cameo talk. If you want to jump in. We're going to wrap it up. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, if you want to talk about cameos, now's the time to get in here. Talk or text 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m. Coming up after the 4:30 news, another round of Know Your Onion. That's when Tom, your host, will read you some news headlines, and you have to guess whether they're real or they're from the satirical fake news onion. So it's you hear the headline, and you say either real or onion. We'll have two separate contestants, and we'll do that after the 4:30 news. So get ready for that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for, we're going to wrap up this talk here of cameos. And if you want to get in here, 312-981-7200. Tim says, Chuck Norris. Thank you, Chuck Norris. And David Hasselhoff in Dodgeball. That's a movie I've only seen once.
Oh, man. That was a legendary cameo for people my age.
I don't remember. I mean, I didn't like Dodgeball. I didn't think it was. The best part of Dodgeball was Jason Bateman and who was the other guy?
Oh, and Gary Cole.
Yeah. That was the best part of the movie. Those two guys were hilarious. Gary Cole, they were both hilarious as the announcers.
Peter LaFleur is putting a blindfold on his head. Yeah, he's going to have a hard time seeing with that, Cotton.
Yeah. Is Stephen Root the one that trained them and whipped them?
No, it's Stephen Root is like the really meek guy.
It's Rip Torn. Oh, right, it's Rip Torn.
Necessary? Is it necessary that I drink my own urine? No, but it's sterile, and I like the taste.
Rip Torn rules, man. He rules. The guy starred in Freddy Got Fingered. I mean, that right there. And he's Artie from the Larry Sanders Show. I mean, that's just...
He's also bonkers, man.
Yeah, you know, he's crazy.
He's wild.
Yeah, so... you ever see the footage of him and Norman Mailer shirtless beating the hell out of each other drunk?
Yeah.
it's legendary.
I can't, yeah. No.
Could you imagine drinking with those two guys? Norman Mailer and Rip Torn? I wouldn't even want to be in the same country with them if they're getting boozed up and then beating that, taking off their shirts. And
I think the shirts off part was really.
That's the best part. That's the best part. I love it when you see footage of like street fights or something. It's the idiot who's like takes off his shirt.
Yeah, it's gonna
let's go, man! And then
he's got a tattoo on his chest that just says "Ma."
There was a running gag in this play that the factory did called "Hey Dancin'." Oh no! This was called this was the sequel to "Poppin' in Lockdown." They did a play about prison and breakdancing, and it was called "Poppin' in Lockdown." And then there was a sequel to it that my buddy Steve directed. It was "Poppin' in Lockdown, Dude." "Poppin' in Lockdown 2, Do the Dance Thing." And there was a character who worked for like the bad guy who every time he would do something, like almost every scene, he would get mad and just take his shirt off and walk off stage, like get ready to fight. Yeah. It was just a running gag.
Could be just like Randy and the Trailer Park Boys.
Yeah.
Never wear a shirt.
406 area code, Rush and I Love You, Man. There's another movie I don't like.
What? Oh, I love it, especially for the Rush cameo.
The Rush stuff is the best stuff in the movie, as far as I'm concerned. I didn't like it. I'll tell you what movie I love, though, that came out around the same time, features Paul Rudd. I love Role Models.
Role Models is amazing.
Oh, my God, is that a great movie.
David Wayne.
Yeah, and it's so funny, and Sean William Scott is great in it, and the kids are great, McLovin. All the kids are great. The cosplay stuff is unbelievably funny.
And Jane Lynch.
Jane Lynch.
You know what I had for breakfast? Cocaine.
Yeah. And then she comes out from behind the TV.
Yeah.
Her entrance.
Isn't one of the guys, he was like a writer or something for, maybe not Letterman, but he's the dude who's really into Sturdy Wings. He's like a redhead.
Oh, yeah.
He was a writer for a late night show, yeah. I feel.
And Ken Jeong is in it. Yeah, from Reno 911 and... He's been in a ton of stuff. He's a regular on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Joe Rigillo?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in it, and he's hilarious in it. That's a funny movie, Role Models. All right, real quick, another cameo that people love. Adam West is Mayor Adam West in Family Guy. And then 419, Raquel Welch was hilarious on Seinfeld. Yes, she was. That's where Kramer goes on stage when at the Tonys and wins a Tony, and then he comes home at like 8 o'clock in the morning and he's got the Tony and it's like, oh, you can't ruin my life. I watch the sunset. I watch the sunrise at Liza's, and they go Minnelli's. He goes no. All right, we'll take a break. We come back. We got the news, and after the news, we're going to talk about songs that were banned, songs that were censored. That's coming up, 312-981-7200, right here on WGN. Requested Henry Mancini.
That was Dino.
Dino.
Wanted to hear the Pink Panther theme.
There it is. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here, Wildcard Wednesday. You've been Wildcard Wednesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here till 5 a.m. this morning, and after the 4:30 news, we're going to play a little Know Your Onion. So get ready to go. You call in. First two people through, we'll play separately. We'll get you on the line. Tom will read some news headlines, and you have to figure out whether they're real or The Onion. And then you win some prizes. That's how it works. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So June 3rd, 1956, rock and roll was banned in Santa Cruz, California. It's a favorite haunt of author Ken Kesey and his merry pranksters. It was established capital of the West Coast counterculture scene in the mid-60s, yet 10 years earlier, the balance of power in this crunchy beach town 70 miles south of San Francisco tilted heavily toward the older generation and the generation gap. In the early months of the rock and roll revolution, in fact, at a time when adult authorities around the country were struggling to come to terms with a booming population of teenagers with vastly different musical tastes and attitude, Santa Cruz captured national attention for its response to the crisis. And on June 3rd, 1956, city authorities announced a total ban on rock and roll at public gatherings. calling the music detrimental to both health and morals of our youth and community. So that's how far we've come. And speaking of banning things, like all of rock and roll was banned in Santa Cruz in 1956. But over the years, a lot of songs have been banned or were very controversial or censored. And if you you know, want to jump in here with any of the conversations about the stories that you've heard, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for banned or censored songs. And the National Coalition Against Censorship put together this list of 40 songs that were banned and the stories behind them. And so we're going to learn about why some of these controversial songs ended up being banned or censored. The intro says this: sex, violence, drugs, politics, religion, and just plain loud noise have all been grounds for music censorship, whether referencing taboo subject matter, challenging the government and commercialism, or just upsetting the masses directly or indirectly. Musicians are targeted out of fear of their power over listeners. In honor of National Freedom Day, the NCAC has compiled a list of 40 banned and censored songs that we doubt your parents would approve of. So here we go. First one on the list is You Don't Know How It Feels by Tom Petty. It's because of the joint line.
Wait, you're going to tell me that Tom Petty smoked weed?
What?
He blew weed? He was flipping lids?
I can't believe he was flipping lids. In Tom Petty's You Don't Know How It Feels, the common practice of censoring drug-related content was demonstrated. The line, "Let's roll another joint," is almost always censored during airplay. The word joint was obscured by MTV as well as through a technique where the word is reversed, making it indecipherable. Yeah, I remember. Well, like you couldn't figure out what the word was, because the song, because the word that he says before it is "let's get to the point," let's roll another, and you're not going to know what that is.
See, that's because I feel like every time I've heard it since like the 2000s, he said joint.
No,
like,
I've heard joint on the. I've definitely heard.
They
him
definitely
say,
reverse it eventually,
yeah,
but
yeah. I remember when the video came on MTV, and they would do that weird indecipherable thing so that you didn't know it was the word joint. So this is from 2011, Red Nation by The Game. I don't know this. MTV, BET, and numerous radio stations banned the rapper The Game's Red Nation due to its reference to gang life. This did not affect the song's popularity, though. The music video received over 10 million views on YouTube. The Game has actually said that he wished more of his songs were banned because it would make him even more popular. I don't know the song.
I mean, it's not anything special, really. Yeah.
But MTV and BET and other radio stations banned it. All right, from 1978, Greased Lightning from Greased by John Travolta. The song Greased Lightning, there is some... for people who don't know, the movie version of Greased is different than the original stage version. Like, a lot different. Like, a lot less racy and a lot less adult. There were some... The subject matter got a lot darker on stage. The original one, there was a lot of swearing in it. The lyrics had some curse words in it. And so they cleaned it up a lot when they made the movie version of it. Grease, by the way, was created right here in Chicago.
Yeah. Didn't it play at Kingston Mines before it was Kingston Mines?
Yep. The song Greased Lightning from the musical film Grease surprisingly features some fairly crude content. The line, "It ain't no blank," is usually cut from radio airplay. But ironically, when the character Rizzo used the Italian curse word fangul in the song "Look at Me, Sandra D," it was not censored. Yeah, there's some kind of raunchy stuff in that song still, in Greased Lightning. Like, if you actually listen to the lyrics, it's like, what?
Yeah, I don't know why my mom was like, "Oh yeah, we got to watch Grease. It's great for the whole family." Even as a kid, I was like, I don't know how I feel about this.
Well, I mean, like the "Summer Lovin'," "Having a Blast," and then
did she put up a fight?
Yeah,
wow.
Tell me more. Did she put up a fight? What?
There was that SNL where they with Jimmy and
and Tina Fey,
and they made fun of that.
Yeah, and it was I believe it was Fallon's Last Night. If I'm not mistaken, it was Fallon's.
It was just before
just the end
summer
of the
break.
Season. Yeah. It was the end of the season. Yeah. No, that was fantastic. It was very funny. You remember when he almost touched her boob and she went and. Brown-eyed girl. Brown Eyed Girl, Van Morrison, 1967. This rock classic, originally called Brown Skinned Girl, is about an interracial relationship. Morrison changed the title because he believed it would make more and be more radio friendly. Some stations banned the song anyway because of the line, making love in the green grass. It's amazing how things are, you know, what's accepted now as opposed to back then. Making love in the green grass. However, an edited version was released later on, changing it to Laughing and a Runnin'. Hey, hey. Rock stations everywhere now play Brown Eyed Girl consistently. Okay, I don't. I can't even say this on the air.
No.
This next one, I can't even say it on the air. So I'm going to skip it. Strange Fruit by Billie Holiday. This is a really a beautiful, beautiful song, but also really depressing. This song was a profound and powerful depiction of Billie Holiday's horror over a lynching. It was banned from U.S. radio for its heavy, morbid content upon its release in 1939. As dark as the lyrics were, this was a song that the public truly needed to hear at that time. In 1965, Billie Holiday's music was censored again when ABC Radio refused to play Love for Sale, as the song's lyrics were about prostitution. What do we got? Which one do we have? Strange Fruit?
Yeah, a little Strange Fruit right here.
Southern trees bear strange fruit. Blood on the leaves and blood at the root. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. Man, that's such a great song.
And Kanye West actually sampled it in one of his albums pretty well.
Yeah.
Really, yeah. He used it very, very interestingly.
Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow by the Shirelles was censored in 1960. Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow is a song about the day following an intimate encounter with a man. It's nothing less than an American classic and made history by becoming the first number one hit by a black female group. It was also the first number one on the Hot Billboard Hot 100 charts, which debuted in 1958. The song was banned by radio station for its mild sexual content, but it sold over a million copies.
Can't keep a good song down, I guess.
Oh, man. Love Game by Lady Gaga. It's from 2009. I don't know this song at all. This nightclub hit was banned on the radio for its highly suggestive themes, especially the infamous line, "I want to take a ride on your disco stick." Gaga believed that radio authorities were too hard on her, but admitted that the line was not intended to be subtle by any means. The pop artist was faced with additional censorship worldwide when her song Judas was banned in Lebanon for being offensive to Christianity. All right.
Yeah, I remember that song when that was really huge, and even I was kind of struck by it. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah,
I don't... it's on radio? Seriously?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think... I wouldn't probably... I mean, I don't know Lady Gaga's music very well, because I just don't like it, so I don't listen to it. The Who, My Generation, 1965, a rather unique case. My Generation was banned from the radio for a reason unrelated to its lyrical content. The song featured vocals that resembled stuttering. Afraid to offend people, I never even thought of that before. I swear to you, I never thought of that. With actual stuttering problems, the BBC prohibited the song from receiving airplay. Later, when the song proved to be a huge hit, they allowed it.
That's wild.
That never even occurred to me that they would be, that they, yeah, that's interesting. That's really interesting. All right. How about this? The Pill by Loretta Lynn from 1975. Upon its release in 1975, radio stations refused to give Loretta Lynn's song The Pill airplay because its content regarded birth control, which was widely looked down upon at the time. Loretta Lynn.
Coal miner's daughter.
Yeah. She wrote a song called The Pill because she had like 55 brothers and sisters. Yeah. if I remember the movie correctly. All right. Let's take a break, everybody. And we're talking about controversial songs from the past. And really, it's kind of interesting to the stories behind why they were banned or censored. And if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. Also coming up after 4:30, remember, Know Your Onion. That's coming up a little bit later on.
When explanations make no sense, when every answer's wrong, you're fighting with lost confidence.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, did somebody request this because I made the mistake and thought Swing Out Sister was the Blow Monkeys when we played the Blow Monkeys song from?
No, Ike just wanted to throw in
his 80s.
Some deep cuts.
Yeah. No, that's not deep. That was a hit. That was a big hit, Swing Out Sister. Yeah.
Shows how much I know.
Well, I mean, you weren't alive. So, but. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. Blah, 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 blah. And we're talking about songs that were either banned or censored and the stories behind why they were either banned or censored. And it's really interesting because times are just so different now, you know. How about a few texts here? 219 area code says, the song Rumble by Link Ray. I think it's the only song with no lyrics ever to be banned from the radio. Wonder why Rumble was banned from the radio. Do we know why Rumble was banned from the radio?
I'm going to find out. I feel like that's true. I feel like I had heard something about that.
Because it's got such a sexy beat. You know, the original Svengoolie, Tom, Jerry G. Bishop, used that song by Link Ray with a woman screaming for his opening credits, for the theme to the song. So it'll be blam, 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 ding, 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 and then a woman going, ah, ah! That was the theme to the original Svengoolie.
Yeah, so it was banned from radio stations.
Okay.
And the song was banned from radio stations in New York and Boston for fear that it might actually incite gang violence, the first and only instrumental song to be banned from the air.
Got it. Here's Trucker Rich on WGN. Hey, Rich.
Hey, Nick. Hey. I can't remember the name of the song. You probably know it or heard about it. I think it was like on, I know they probably played it on Dr. Demento, but They're Coming to Take Me Away.
That's the name of the song, yeah.
And yeah, they banned it because it was like making fun of mental health, I think.
Yeah, Napoleon something the Third was the artist behind that song. And,
yeah.
But I mean, Dr. Demento played it constantly.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of liked it. It was funny, but people took it seriously.
Yeah, people took it seriously. But I think that song's actually pretty great. I was always one of my favorite when I was younger. So yeah.
And then I thought of a couple more while I was on hold. My ex girlfriend's parents thought "Blinded by the Light" had the nastiest lyrics.
Oh,
of all
right. It's not douche. Yeah, it's not.
Right. It's revved up like a deuce.
Like a deuce. Right. Exactly. Not douche.
Right. And another runner in the night.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and didn't they ban Eve of Destruction in 2011 after the...
Maybe they did.
September 11th tragedy?
Yeah. That would be 2001.
Oh, yeah, 2001. Yeah, that was
but
it.
Yeah, I think they did. I think a lot of stuff was pulled from the airwaves. You know, we were, you know, I had to do a show 4 days after 9/11. And, you know, the radio stations were sent a list of songs that they were forbid to play at that time.
Yeah, I think I remember hearing you on that because I was working overnights.
Yeah. Yeah.
We, everybody I worked with, we all listened to GN.
Yeah, of course, that was an unbelievably difficult show to do. Nobody knew what to do anymore. And I do a show that's kind of like supposed to be light and fun and
right.
You know, topics that are kind of hilarious and funny and entertaining. And I didn't know what the hell to do when I got on there. I did the show. And then at the end of the show, I played a song called Fragile by Sting. That's the only thing that I played, which is a beautiful song. And so that was how I closed the show. I played Fragile by Sting. So
yeah, I think GN handled that day.
Oh, it was unbelievable.
You know, with Spike.
Yep.
All through the day.
Absolutely.
And then it got on to you, and then Steve and Johnny, and then you. Or, you know,
yeah.
When you came on that after that. You know, it's like, yep, this was with dignity.
Yeah,
you know?
No, absolutely. Class organization, WGN, I'm telling you. All right, Rich, thanks, buddy.
Yep, thanks. Have a good evening, Nick.
You too, buddy. All right. Was the song Timothy by the Buoys ever banned? Nothing like a bouncy tune about cannibalism. 847 area code, Sam says, hi, Nick. I know that Louie Louie by the Kingsmen was banned, and the FBI investigated the song because the parents were insisting that it was filthy lyrics. Thanks for another great show. Yeah, that song was banned because nobody could understand what they were saying. They were like, well, they could be swearing, so let's not play the song. You know, because the drunks in Animal House who are performing that song are actually as close to being accurate to what the lyrics really sound like, even though they're hammered. Glenn and Evan said, Money for Nothing by Dire Straits was banned for the use of the F word. Not that F word, but the derogatory term for homosexual. 262 area code says, you kids are just too darn loud. I know. I can't. I agree with you. Everything is just too loud now.
I didn't know Huey Lewis listened to the show.
You're just too darn loud, Harry. Yeah. How about this? Another one that was banned, Sailing by Rod Stewart in 1972. Rod Stewart's Sailing is an example of wartime censorship. When Britain recaptured the South Atlantic Falkland Islands after the Argentine invasion in April of 1982, British radio programmers banned certain songs with nautical themes. Sailing was one of them. Really?
Yeah, it was bad.
With nautical themes? You couldn't even play anything with nautical themes?
Yeah, anything getting close to touching the Falklands was pretty much just a no-go. And people were very, obviously people were already upset. And
sure.
The British government stepping in and trying to tell people how to feel, especially Maggie Thatcher.
Yeah, well.
You know what the number one, the day she died, you know what the number one song in Britain was?
No.
And it was funny because BBC Radio 1, they do the top 40 and they couldn't play it. Because it was Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead.
Really?
Either the day of or the day after she died, they couldn't do the top 40 show because number one was Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead.
Okay. Next one I remember. I remember this one, MIA with Paper Planes. I remember that song was everywhere. Speaking of Pineapple Express, the song was subjected to censorship on MTV and Late Night with David Letterman due to gunshot sounds heard in the song's chorus. This is a classic story that we've told on the show before. Radio by Elvis Costello and the Attractions. Elvis Costello and the Attractions were prohibited from playing Radio on Saturday Night Live in 1977 because they believed the song expressed anti-media sentiments. A few seconds into performing a different song, they rebelliously switched to Radio without telling anyone. And then Costello was reportedly banned from the show for 12 years. Yeah. That's a great moment to watch too. It's out there, if you want to see it on the YouTubes. Hey Joe by Jimi Hendrix. Oh, I can't understand why this song would be banned. 1966, Radio Behemoth Clear Channel Communications barred this song after 9/11 because of its violent subject matter. Censorship around Hendrix and this song also took place during his appearance on the BBC show, Happening for Lulu. Where he abruptly stopped his performance and transferred from Hey Joe to a noisy instrumental version of Cream's Sunshine of Your Love. Displeased, to say the least, the producer pulled Hendrix and his band off the air and banned them from the BBC. Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole song is about a guy who's going to kill his old lady because she was messing around with another man. So, hey, by the way, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, that is coming up. We're going to take a break. The news is coming up, and then we're going to jump back into songs that were censored or banned and the stories behind them. And then after 4:30, it's time for Know Your Onion right here on WGN.
Raindrops are falling on my head, and just like the guy whose feet are too big for his bed, nothing seems to fit. Those raindrops are falling on my head. They keep falling.
Ah, yes. So the only part of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid that I don't like. Like, right in the middle of this great movie, there's like a music video. I like the song, though.
Great song.
BJ Thomas. And it won the Oscar, I believe, for best song. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Wildcard Wednesday continues. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. Who requested the BJ Thomas?
That was Glenn with two N's.
Glenn with two N's. Not one. Two.
Two.
All right. Hey, it's Nick DiGilio. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Coming up after the 4:30 news, Tom is going to host yet another edition of Know Your Onion. We'll have two separate contestants call in, get them on the air. Tom will read you some news headlines, and you have to identify them as either being real or from the satirical comedy newspaper, The Onion. And you just answer real or The Onion, and you'll win some prizes. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text if you would like to jump in with us. We are talking about songs that were censored and songs that were banned and the stories behind why they were. Some fascinating stuff here. We've got some texts we'll get to. First, let's get to David. Hi, David.
Hi. I was in the Navy in the Persian Gulf. We were escorting tankers in Persian Gulf. I was listening to Jimi Hendrix, War, and the captain of the ship confiscated my cassette.
Oh,
and
really?
I left. Yeah, he didn't really allow me to play that song at all, and he confiscated my cassette. When I left the military, it was broken. So,
wow.
I wasn't allowed to listen or play War by Jimi Hendrix.
Ah, okay. All right. All right, David, thanks for the story. Take care.
Thanks.
All right. Now I would bet Vic would be upset if someone confiscated your Jimi Hendrix.
Well, if it was the commander, he wouldn't know I was upset. That's for sure. I'd say, yes, sir. Enjoy it, sir. Thank you, sir.
Oh, man. All right. We got some texts here. 309 area code says the Pusher by Steppenwolf. I wonder if that was ever censored. 630 area code. Didn't Janet Jackson have to change Nasty Boys? Oh, I don't remember. I Want to Kiss You All Over by Exile was banned by some stations, 312 area code says. Really, it was? All right, the next one here in the story that we're talking about, Love to Love You, Baby by Donna Summer. Yeah, this is... This is a great one. They were actually concerned. They were like concerned that she really had an orgasm during the recording of the song.
They were concerned.
They were like, I don't want to play an orgasm on the air. This sexually charged disco anthem was Donna Summer's first hit. It became popular worldwide, but broadcasters, including the BBC, banned it due to its blatant sexual content. These included sounds of orgasms and crude lyrics. Summer said that she did, in fact, understand the bands and regrets that it was her first popular single, which subsequently shaped her image as an artist. It's a great song. Adele's Rollin' in the Deep was censored. Many radio stations censored the part of the song's first verse due to its ambiguity between whether she says the word ship or the other word in one line. Go ahead and sell me out. And I'll lay your blank bare. And online lyrics stated that the word was ship, while Adele's handwritten lyrics actually featured the expletive instead. Also suggested that the intended word, in fact, was the expletive. Adele replaced the word in question with stuff during a televised performance of the song. The line reaching the fever pitch was also mistaken as reaching the fever bitch, which was censored by some stations as well. Wow, Adele getting censored. What's the world coming to? I remember there was a regular at Ricochet's who would come in, and every time he came in, he sat in the same stool. He sat like in his stool, like all of us regulars kind of had our own stools there. And he was going, I guess he was going through something. He was going through like a breakup, or he was having a, you know, and for about a month, he played nothing but Adele on the jukebox. Nothing but Adele. And listen, I like Adele. I think Adele's great. And I think she's got a magnificent voice, and I really like her. I think she is, as a personality and as a person, I think she's fantastic. But enough was enough with this guy.
Come on, man. I do have an affinity for jukebox kind of trolling. I think it's kind of funny at times.
Yeah.
I got a couple of buddies that live over on Southport, and they live close enough to a bar where they can reach the touch tunes.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
With the app. So they play variation. They'll do Paradise by the Dashboard Light. They'll do, what was it, Dominic the Donkey at any time. And then just a smack. And then they do the Holy Trinity, which is Werewolves of London, Sweet Home Alabama, and All Summer Long back to back.
Oh, God.
And you'll see everybody, when they start doing it, everybody goes for a smoke break.
Yeah. No, you know what? And those, when they started getting the internet jukeboxes as opposed to like DVD or CDs, you could trump somebody's choice. You can jump ahead. If you put an extra credit in, you can jump ahead. And people would do that. I would get so mad. We get so angry. But I think at one point, Rick, who the owner of Ricochets, actually disabled that part so people couldn't do it. So people couldn't.
I think that's a smart thing to do.
Jump
over.
I think
this is fair.
Yeah. Yeah. But there were times when in retaliation, I would go up and do the same thing. And then I would play Heart of the Sunrise by Yes, and it's 18 minutes long.
Honestly, I enjoy Yes, but if I were in a bar, that's not like a bar song.
No, it's not.
It's
my favorite Yes song of all time, though, Heart of the Sunrise, and it's like 12 minutes. Sometimes, in real retaliation, I would play And You and I, which is a full album side, and it's 18 minutes long.
Throwing some Pink Floyd, throwing some Echoes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Blurred Lines. Oh, yeah. I know the original version got pulled because it featured nudity. It also got your university. Four universities in the UK forbid the song from being played on campus due to its misogynistic lyrics. So,
plus, you know, he lost that court case.
Yeah, it's
the Marvin Gaye estate. Yeah. Came out on top there.
Jeez. And now he's a judge on The Masked Singer.
Who, Alan Thicke's kid?
Yes, Alan Thicke's kid. All right, let's take a break for some weather here, and then we come back. We'll talk more about censorship songs, and then after the 4:30 news, Tom will lead us in another edition of Know Your Onion for prizes.
What was it you wanted? Tell me again so I'll know. What's happening in there? What's going on in your show? What was it you wanted? Could you say it again? I'll be back in a minute. You can get it together by then.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN Wildcard Wednesday. You hear me, Wildcard Wednesday? Continues. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here in downtown Chicago. A little wet outside, currently not raining here, here downtown, so I hope it's dry where you are. Who requested that?
That was from Rasco. Wanted to hear a little Willie Nelson. The song is called What Was It You Wanted?
There you go. Weed. That's the answer.
You want to get a lid,
Let's
man?
Let's get a lid, man. Let's go get you. Me and Willie are going to go get a lid. Hey, we're back. It's Nick DiGilio, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, and we are talking about songs that were banned or censored. And then after the 4:30 news, we'll do another round of Know Your Onion. So you got to know the difference between a real headline and an onion headline. And with that, you will win some prizes. So there you go. All right. This next one, which is featured in the article, is God Only Knows by the Beach Boys. 1966, this soft, harmonious ballad off of the Beach Boys' most unique album, Pet Sounds, was forbidden in some parts of the U.S. for blasphemy. Even without any negative connotation, it was considered unacceptable at the time to use the word God in a song. The writers anticipated the controversy and did have second thoughts at one point, including the word in the title and the chorus. Once they chose to keep it, though, they were happy after their decision, and so were their fans. Let's hear a little bit of this because it's one of the greatest songs ever recorded.
Are you the same?
Oh. You got to turn off the Willie Nelson. He's been blowing weed.
So sure about it, God only knows what I'd be without you. If you should ever leave me, oh, life would still go on, believe me. The world could show nothing to me.
Yeah.
So what good would living be?
So when Pet Sounds came out, Paul McCartney heard it and said, we have to do something about this. And they did Sgt. Pepper's. So the reason why Pepper's exists is because it freaked the Beatles out, because Pet Sounds is so damn good.
It's amazing. It's an amazing record.
And that song, by the way, which is just one of my favorite, it's truly one of my favorite songs of all time, used magnificently at the end of Boogie Nights. So how about In the Air Tonight? This seemingly harmless song by Phil Collins has been banned on two separate occasions. First in 1991, after BBC forbid 67 songs from airplay during the connection to the war occurring in the Persian Gulf. A second time in 2001, when Clear Channel Communications prohibited 162 songs from the airwaves after the 9/11 attacks.
I can see why, I suppose, yeah. But I figured they'd be banned for the sick drum solo.
Yeah, man. Because you know why they would ban it? Because if someone was driving in their car listening to the song, they would immediately take their hands off the wheel so that they could air drum, and they were smashing into trees. There was an epidemic of people who, because you have to air drum. Right.
It's so weird. If you ever see that play in public, you'll see at least like 10 dudes
just
all
in
synchronicity.
That's what I'm saying. They banned it because people were smashing into trees. Notorious B.I.G. Juicy. Rapper Notorious B.I.G.'s song Juicy is another example of how tragic events can provoke censorship. The line, time to get paid, blow up like the world trade, was removed from the song after the September 11th attacks, and the line was initially referencing the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, using the phrase blow up for slang as achieving quick and sudden fame. You know, the 1993 World Trade Center attack, I will always remember it specifically because for some reason my friends and I were at a taping of Jenny Jones. My buddy, he got tickets, and he's like, you want to go to a taping of Jenny Jones? And I'm like, hey, what the hell? We can make fun of it. So we go to a taping of Jenny Jones, which, by the way, was a nightmare. Absolute nightmare, because we got into the studio, and they don't let you leave. Like, you can't leave. Once you're in there, you can't leave. And the topic, lovely enough, was I don't like my daughter's black boyfriend. That was the topic of Jenny Jones when we were there. And I immediately wanted to get the hell out of there. I was like, I got to get out of here. And we couldn't leave. And by the way, Jenny Jones was just like a human, she just like a robot. Every single question was held up for her on a dry erase board by a PA in the audience. She didn't answer. She didn't ask one single question. Everything was written for her. She was like a mannequin. So we went through this horrible, horrible taping, which was just uncomfortable and ridiculous, and just, it was bad TV and, you know, idiots in the audience. It was just horrible. We leave, jump in the elevator. It was done at the NBC Tower. That's where they taped it. That Jenny Jones.
Yeah.
In the NBC Tower. So we take the elevator down, and down on the first floor of the NBC is the newsroom. So we get out of the elevator, and you can see through the newsroom. They've got glass there, so if you're in the hallway, you can actually see what's happening in the NBC newsroom. We get in there, we look, and everybody's running around like the place is up for grabs. And we're looking, we see on the TV, we see the World Trade Center, and we see that. So that's how we found out about the bombing after we saw a Jenny Jones taping.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Nice. Things go from bad to worse.
Nice capper on the day. Yeah. Lola by the Kinks. You know, I had a friend, and I'm not kidding, who did not realize that Lola was a transvestite until about 2005. I'm not kidding.
Wow.
This is a Factory Theater member. One night we had an opening party, you know, and he plays music and stuff. And so somebody came up and said, hey, man, play Lola. So he would like DJ our parties. Because we like once the theater was empty, we would bust out some beer and some food and we'd have a party for our opening night. You know, the audience was allowed to hang out and stuff. And we all just had a party, opening night party. And he always did the music. And somebody recorded Lola. And he had, it's not like he'd never heard the song. And the song was, you know, the song was released in 1970, and it's been a staple on FM radio for all those years. And he was sitting there, and he was listening to the song, and he went, "Oh, really?" And I'm like, "What do you?" He's like, "This song is Lola a guy?" And I'm like, "Yes." What?
Where you been,
what,
man?
Lola's a transvestite. What the hell is wrong with you? It's in the lyrics.
Do you have a preferred version?
The studio version.
Studio version. Is that the one where it says Coca-Cola?
No, that's the live version. Coca-Cola. Oh, no. It's Cherry Cola.
Cherry Cola.
Yeah. But then in the live version, it's like Lola, L-O-L-A. They do the whole L-O-L-A callback.
It's super annoying.
That's a great song, though.
It is.
The Kinks' Lola was a popular single. It reached number 2 on the UK charts, number 9 in the US. The song faced censorship on less common ground than most. The original studio recording contained the word Coca-Cola in the lyrics, which violated BBC Radio's policy against, so they changed it to Cherry Cola. And he made a round-trip flight of 6,000 miles from New York to London just to record that. Change it from Coca-Cola. You would think the lyrics of the song would be the thing that would be censored. But it's the Coca-Cola line. Again, Louie by the Kingsmen makes this article because nobody understood what they were saying. So they just assumed that they were swearing. How about this one? Walk Like an Egyptian. Walk Like an Egyptian by the Bangles is another song banned by both BBC in 1991 and Clear Channel Communications in 2001. Again, the purpose was to avoid offending those who would relate this song to references to Egypt and conflicts in the Middle East. All right. The Hand That Feeds by Nine Inch Nails. Nine Inch Nails dropped out of the MTV Movie Awards after being prohibited from using an image of President George W. Bush as their backdrop for the performance. The song also included political statements, which MTV was uncomfortable televising. All right. Let's take a break here, and we'll wrap this topic up a little bit later on, but we got the news coming up, and then right after the news, it's up to you to know your onion. And if you want to call in, first caller through, we're going to have two separate callers and two separate rounds of the game. 312-981-7200. The news is up after this. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we're here until 5 a.m. Wildcard Wednesday getting wrapped up here. Wildcard Wednesday here! It's any artist, any song, anything. What was that?
That was Slayer's cover of In a Gata Da Vida.
Slayer?
Yeah, and that's from the soundtrack for to Less Than Zero.
Wow.
Coming to us from the 773.
Must have forgot about that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. All right, welcome back, everybody. All right, we're about to play our show, our game show here that Tom is the host of, and it's called Know Your Onion, and he will read you some news headlines, and you have to decide whether or not they are real or the onion. Are we ready for the intro?
It's time to Know Your Onion!
Very excited crowd.
As always.
I'm very excited. All right, we have our contestants. They will play separately, and let's. Our first contestant is Tim, and he's in Oak Forest. Hi, Tim.
Hi.
Hi. Are you familiar with the Onion?
Yeah.
Okay. So here's what you got to do: you listen to these news headlines, and you just say after you hear it, you just say whether you think it's real or the Onion. Got it?
All right.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right. Our first headline is coming from politics. Mitch McConnell is feeling emasculated by wife who makes more illicit money than him. Is that real or the onion?
I'm going to say onion.
Very good, Tim. That's a little gimme for you. Yeah. That is definitely the onion.
That's the onion. All right. Okay. All right. Cool. Good start. Good start, Tim. Here we go.
All right. Next one. Utah cops may soon face discipline for sexting and masturbation on duty. Is that real or The Onion?
Tough one, but I'm
going to
say that's real.
Excellent!
Wow. Yes, that's coming
real?
To us.
That's yeah. real?
That's very real. Coming to us from Fox 13 in Salt Lake City.
Where's the hand sanitizer? all right. All you got to do is get one more, Tim, and you're our first winner of the morning.
All right.
Okay, here we go.
All right, let's see here. Next one. Apple announces plans to sell Power Mac G4 for $120. Is that real or The Onion?
Oh, I can care less about Apple, but I'm going to say that's Onion.
Excellent! Wow. You are the first person that's got three in a row.
That's amazing.
You are our winner.
All right,
Tom. Or Tim, you're going to hang on for a little bit here. You win some Lumel Nottis. It's a Lumel Nottis gift certificate. Lumel Nottis is the home of all Chicago's right. best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40 Chicagoland locations or order online at lumelnottis.com. Hang on, Tim. All right, Tim is going to hang on for a little bit, and we have a second contestant here. Are we ready?
Yeah.
All right, here's Edwin on WGN. Hi, Edwin.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Are you familiar with The Onion?
Of course.
Okay, so you have to decide whether the news headline that Tom reads is either real or The Onion, and you got to get a majority of five to win. All right?
Hey, that sounds like a plan.
Okay.
Okay, let's do this. All right, first headline coming to us from down south. Texas Walmart accidentally gives family styrofoam cake. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I believe that's real.
Let's see. I don't know. Oh, jackpot.
Wow.
That's a very real headline coming to us from WNYT.
Was in Texas?
Yeah. A family went to go get a birthday cake, and when they cut into it, it was made of styrofoam.
We should have saved that for Friday.
I know. That's a good one.
That's a good one. Okay.
Well, the real cake does taste like styrofoam.
Yeah,
anyway.
Well, there you go. Hello. All right. What's your next headline? Here we go.
All right. Okay. Next headline. Principal admits to accidentally plagiarizing a 2013 Ashton Kutcher speech. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I believe that could be real.
Okay, let's see.
Oh, I like that.
That is a very real headline.
I'm telling you, Trevor Noah had a field day with that last night on The Daily Show. They cut it. They intercut the actual Ashton Kutcher 2013 Kids' Choice Awards with this high school principal giving the commencement speech. And it was unbelievably funny, and it was hilarious. And, like, if you're going to plagiarize someone, you're going to plagiarize Ashton Kutcher.
I know.
I couldn't believe it, but that was real. That's real. All right. Nice job, Edwin. You're doing as well as Tim did. It'll be brand new that if we get three in a row right back to back.
Yeah, that'll be wild. Let's see what you got.
Here we go.
Okay. Dutch officials launch perfume that smells like MDMA. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I'm going to say it's The Onion.
Oh, that's real.
Just because I don't even know what MDA is.
Oh,
I think you're better off. Yeah,
I think Spring Awakening is coming up soon, exactly. So you could find out.
Wow. All right. Well, you got one wrong. But you only need one more. You only need one more right. You got two left here to read from. So you got to get one of these two. Here we go.
Great.
All right, from the entertainment world, Jay-Z vows not to lose touch with his millionaire roots on gritty throwback track about buying first yacht. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I think that's The Onion.
Let's see. This could be it.
Excellent!
There you go.
There it is. You got it. We got two winners this morning.
Wow, two big winners.
Two big winners. All right, Edwin, congratulations. You, too, have a Lumel Nottis gift certificate. Lumel Nottis is the home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at lumelnottis.com. Hang on, Edwin, okay?
I appreciate you, Nick.
All right, take care, buddy. There you go. Hold on. Both guys, hang on. Wow, that was a good round. Good round. Wow! Only one miss out of the two contestants this morning was only one mistake.
There was one that I included that I didn't want to read if I didn't have to because it was so obvious. You might get a kick out of it. Rocket Man viewers not sure movie really needed 45-minute Princess Diana death scene.
Yeah, no, that's the. I remember reading that. That's the Onion. You know what else is funny? They did a news story on the Daily Show last night. They did a news story, and this is real. Russia has edited out all the drugs and all the homosexual and sex related stuff out of Rocket Man. So I'm thinking to myself, what is it, 15 minutes long now in Russia? It's like all the drug references, all the drug and all the sexual and homosexual stuff taken out in Russia. So
what a waste.
Yeah, I mean literally, it's going to be like a 20-minute movie then if you take all that stuff out. All right. Well, we'll do that again next week, next Wednesday. Every Wednesday morning after the 4:30 news, we play Know Your Onion. So keep your eyes peeled on those news headlines during the week. And if you read The Onion, you'll know which one is real, which one isn't. It's just that the news gets so weird now that it a real headline can absolutely be an Onion headline. All right. All right, let's get back to our conversation here. We are talking about, if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. If you want to contribute to the banned and censored song topic that we are going into, and we've got some texts here. 708 area code says, The Doors Light My Fire. The Doors Light My Fire, was controversial and when they performed it. When they performed it live, it was they had on TV. They had to change the lyrics. 920 area code says you effed up old hag from Pink Floyd's Pigs, three different ones, has always gone uncensored. It's true. It's weird how some of the FM stations that play these classic rock songs that actually feature some profanity just let it slide. 779 area code says, how times have changed. Hendrix couldn't play his song on the air, but we sure heard Eminem sing about killing Kim. 716 area code, System of a Down had a song, Chop Suey, that wasn't banned, but the title was changed from Suicide after 9/11 for radio play. I did not know that Chop Suey was actually originally called Suicide. That song is a jam, by the way. So, all right. How about this one? Here's one that's been censored or banned. From 1981, Olivia Newton-John's Physical became extremely popular in the U.S. and the U.K. upon its release, but some radio stations banned the song due to its sexual content and censored lines such as, there's nothing left to talk about unless it's horizontally. Another source of controversy around the song was that the music video featured a gay couple holding hands, who comically ignored Olivia's advances throughout the video. The scene caused the video to be banned by some broadcasters, and even MTV censored it. That is ridiculous. And as we just mentioned, a listener texted in, Light My Fire. Here's the actual story behind that. The Doors were blacklisted from the Ed Sullivan Show on September 17th, 1965, for failing to change the line, Girl, We Couldn't Get Much Higher, which was a reference to drug use, to Girl, We Couldn't Get Much Better. Lead singer Jim Morrison had initially agreed to self-censor during his performance, but like many artists, he could not resist presenting his work in its true form. BBC also banned this song 24 years later at the time because of the word fire. This was done to avoid upsetting radio listeners during the Persian Gulf War. Other Doors songs like Unknown Soldier were also banned for its anti-war message. So there you go. Those are the stories behind some of the Doors songs getting banned. All right, we got a few more of these to do, and we want to hear from you. We're going to break for the weather, and when we come back, we'll wrap up the show and wrap up all the banned and censored songs. 312-981-7200, talk and text if you want to jump in on the topic.
A chicken farmer took a walk out on his farm one day. He paused by the coop as he went along his way. When all at once a rotten egg hit him. It was a sight he dreaded. Ghost chickens in the sky.
Wow. He's a, I wonder who requested this.
I don't know. Some guy named Mr. DiGilio?
Yeah.
Is that how it's pronounced? It's
my dad requested that. Not a shocker. Who's the artist?
Leroy Troy.
Leroy Troy with Ghost Chickens in the Sky.
That was from live in June of 2012, that one.
There you go. There's that version. That's for you, Dad. All right. Listen, coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell, and coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We have been talking about songs that were banned or censored, and we would love to hear from you guys if you want via talk or text, 312-981-7200, as we wrap up this topic and we wrap up this Wednesday morning show. There's Donald on WGN. Hi, Donald.
Hi. I was thinking Aerosmith's Janie's Got a Gun.
Oh, Janie's Got a Gun, sure.
Yeah, I haven't heard that since that Aerosmith concert back in the early 90s. 20s. Because they really don't want to put that out there, I don't think, very much.
I mean,
anymore.
I remember the video was real controversial for that, because it was about an abusive relationship, and the woman, Janie, who's in the abusive relationship, gets a gun, blows the guy away. That's Janie's Got a Gun. I remember that caused a stir. There's no question about it. That one did indeed cause a stir. I love this one. This Note's for You by Neil Young. I love this one. This ballsy parody of commercial rock was banned by MTV for its critique of the music industry's cozy relationship with corporate America. By the way, Donald, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. 312-981-7200. The song and video mocked advertisements and did not shy away from dropping companies' names. The title itself is a jab at Budweiser's ad campaign, This Bud's For You. The song also made fun of pop artists such as Michael Jackson and Whitney Houston. Jackson's legal threats prompted MTV to ban the video. They changed their minds when the song became a hit on Canada's Much Music channel. Canada staying faithful to Neil Young.
They'll always be faithful to him.
Of course. That video is great. I mean, I remember.
It's awesome.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think the video won Video of the Year at the Video Music Awards.
What year did that come out?
88.
Let me take a look.
So it would be, I guess, the awards in 89, maybe, when they give away the awards in 89. But it was released on April in 88. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it won, or at least was nominated. It was banned and real controversial, and it caused a lot of problems, and there was almost going to be lawsuits and all that stuff, but I think it ended up winning.
Yeah, MTV Video Music Award for Best Video of the Year, 1989.
Yeah.
Nice.
Isn't that crazy? Take the Power Back by Rage Against the Machine. After the Chala High School magnet school teachers used this song in a Mexican-American history class, Superintendent John Huppenthal issued a notice of noncompliance to the Tucson Unified School District. So in January 2015, over 20 years after the song was released, Rage Against the Machine's lyrics, along with KRS-One's hip-hop teachings, were deemed to be against Arizona state law, which states that schools cannot advocate ethnic solidarity instead of treatment of pupils as individuals. Really? Wow. Did not know that story. How about this one? Relax by Frankie Goes to Hollywood. So there's my friends and I were having fun trying to put together. We were trying to put together a super group of useless people in bands, like people who don't do anything in certain bands. And we were going to call them the Paul Rutherfords, because Paul Rutherford is the guy in Frankie Goes to Hollywood who does nothing. He just dances on stage. He doesn't sit on a mic. He doesn't do anything. He's just dancing around. He's got a mustache, and he's dancing around. And we were just obsessed with this guy, that he does nothing. And in every music video or every performance that we ever saw of Frankie Goes to Hollywood in the 80s, Paul Rutherford did nothing. He would just dance around like an idiot. So we were trying to think of people in bands that are useless that we would put together with the Paul Rutherford band. And so that was one of our things. But I'm trying to think of some of the members of the Paul Rutherfords. Let's see. On January of 1984, Radio 1 disc jockey Mike Reed publicly expressed his distaste for the song Relax by Frankie Goes to Hollywood. He said he refused to play it and subsequently took the record off of his turntable and broke it in two. Without consulting Reed, Radio 1 had decided to pull the record, which ironically went on to straight to number one on the charts for a 5-week stay. Sarah Jones with Your Revolution. After airing Your Revolution, a song that critiqued hip-hop's treatment of women, a radio station was issued a notice of apparent liability for forfeiture by the FCC, which deemed the song obscene. Jones' attempt to sue the FCC, which resulted in the removal of the NAL, which would have fined the station $7,000. Instead, Jones's case was dismissed. How about this? John Lennon's Imagine. Another object of Clear Channel's post-9/11 bans. This one rather ironic. John Lennon's ballad about peace has been loved and hated worldwide. Religious groups criticized for the line, "Imagine there's no heaven," but that did not stop it from topping the charts and earning widespread critical acclaim. Along with Clear Channel's ban, BBC also took the song off the air in 1991 because of the Gulf War. All right. The Sex Pistols, "God Save the Queen." Really?
That goes without saying.
Really? There was a controversial issue with this song? This extremely controversial song was denied airplay by the BBC in 1977 due to its criticism of the British government, despite the fact that it had reached number 2 on the BBC's own charts. Later, police harassed the band when performed the song on a boat on the Thames. Wow. Yeah, I mean, that's not surprising at all, obviously. Eminem, "The Real Slim Shady." The FCC fined... what's the song where... why am I blanking on the name of the song where it's with Dido and it's...
You mean Dido?
Dido, yeah.
That's Stan.
Stan, right, Stan, yeah.
Yo, what up, Slim?
I love that song.
It's an amazing song.
The FCC fined Colorado Springs Radio $7,000 in June of 2001 for playing the edited or clean version of the song. While the version featured no explicit language, the FCC issued the fine because of the song's sexual references and themes. The commission put guidelines in place earlier in 2001 stating that context and innuendo alone could get the station in trouble for violating its decency standards. How did Stan not get? I mean, it was controversial. There's no question about it.
Yeah. I think it was mainly because it was a story about a man needing help. Because Slim, at the very end, Eminem writes back.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I'm sorry. You know, I wanted to write back to you, but I got so many things going on, but it's already too late.
It's already too late.
Yeah.
You remember the performance at the Grammys with Elton John?
Legendary.
Man.
What a moment.
It was unbelievable. Walk On by U2. Why? U2's album All That You Can't Leave Behind, which is one of my favorite U2 albums, actually. Well, first of all, it's got my favorite U2 song on it, which is Beautiful Day, which I think is...
Well, it's not Elevation?
I like Elevation.
It's all right. The only reason I knew what it was is because they used it in promos for Tomb Raider.
Oh, did they? It was banned in Burma due to its track Walk On. The whole album was banned. This song demonstrates support for the country's democratic movement and was dedicated to activist Daw Aung San Suu Kyi, who was placed under house arrest for her activism. Can't Get No Satisfaction. Like a Prayer by Madonna. That was huge. And she lost her Pepsi deal because of it, too. It was major controversy. The Vatican even got involved in this. Oh, Madonna. I love her. Number 2 on the list is Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds by the Beatles. Because they thought it was about drugs and LSD. And then the big one here is Cop Killer by Body Count. Ice Cube.
Ice-T.
I got pepper sprayed in front of the Vic Theater waiting to go see Body Count.
No way.
Yeah, because there were protesters outside, cops and everything, and so a bus drove by. They put all the protesters on a bus because the cops came and said you have to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were just hanging out outside to soak in the atmosphere before we went in to see the show. And as a bus went by, a kid. Who, by the way, some kids had protest signs that said iced tea, like iced tea, ICED-TEA. Like, we hate iced tea. And I'm like, well, don't drink it. So I got sprayed with pepper spray as a bus went by. Out the window, a kid sprayed pepper spray and it went across my chest.
Well, at least it didn't get in your eyes,
well,
man.
Well, let me tell you something. It hitting the chest was bad enough.
Oh, because just like kind of the fumes.
Oh, it was unbelievable. Like... It was unbelievable. Wow. For like the first half of the concert, I was crying and I was coughing. I had to, like, my jacket, I had to take my jacket to the washroom and rinse it off.
Wow.
Horrible. All right. We're through, and the good Dan Feinberg is going to join us tomorrow to talk TV.